Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Oh, wow. Do I have a story to tell you? This has been an amazing 24 hours because a whole bunch of stuff happened in the last little while that I'm still catching up from. We had yesterday, I was introduced to this amazing video with John Cullen is his name. So like I said, I got my notes all over the place here. And this came to me from Jonathan Mosley, who's going to join us in the second hour. And it looks like we've got a couple of, all right, let me make this one live here. And so we've got Gene on the phone here. And we've got if I seem a little scattered here this morning, just for a little bit, because there's so many things swirling in my head. So Jonathan Mosley gets in touch with me and introduces me to a couple of folks that I'd heard of from several months ago, but hadn't really studied the issue yet. And one of the gentlemen is John Cullen. And John Cullen has uncovered this unbelievable evidence that the Spanish flu is what's really circulating now, not just COVID. In fact, it may not be hardly COVID at all. So we're going to try and sort this out. We've got, they'll be joining us in about an hour and a half. And so it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what happens with this. Also, I've asked Dr. Judy Mikovits to join us as well. So she'll be checking in too. So between John Cullen and Judy Mikovits, we're going to try and sort out what really happened. Did Dr. Fauci, you know, who we call Dr. Fascist around here, did Dr. Fascist somehow reconstruct the Spanish flu? Did he go dig up World War One soldiers and take the genome? And was the gain of function, you know, Spanish flu, not just COVID? Not heard rumors of this. I know a little bit about it, but I'm not really sure yet, which is why we're going to have these folks on. Fortunately, one of the beauties of the show is that people have been nice enough to give their time to us to be able to bring you this kind of information. We've got folks listening in Australia. We've got a lot of, and I'm sure as, you know, I didn't even have time to really promote this properly. So, but most people are listening on podcasts anyway. So, the podcasts are going to be huge, I think. This is going to be a very interesting episode. And we'll start with Jonathan. Jonathan's got his own things to talk about with the January 6th. Folks that he's working with and everything else. So it's going to be quite a day. I'm going to see if we can sort through this, and we may have technical problems. Everything's last minute. We have connections to the show that we're going to try, and it's going to be very. In fact, let's get Jean back on the show here and find out what's happening with her, and away we go. So Jean, are you as scattered as I am this morning? This is a crazy day.
Well, I've got a real big crackling going on in my phone because I can't connect to the internet. This is crazy, crazy, crazy. I think there's just a lot of stuff brewing. But I want to tell the listeners, the gentleman I talked to about in Chattanooga yesterday died. Fauci has another death on his hands.
I am so sorry.
Because it is very sad. I mean, I never knew the guy, but just watching, listening to his brother and the tape recording of what he did on that radio show is so sad. And needless what they went through. You know, it's to think what happened when that poor gentleman got home on hospice. And you can say, okay, people make mistakes, but how can you make a mistake in the fact that you plug him into a machine that doesn't work? You should be monitoring his oxygen levels, number one. Number two, to send home an empty oxygen tank, unacceptable. And three, not even to have someone there around the time he gets home, that's unacceptable. It's like, when did we as Americans stop thinking that American lives were important?
That is an amazing question.
And I resigned yesterday too. So that brings up a whole new point of view that it's like, why did he just all of a sudden resign? After 12 years, it's time. They know they've got blood on their hands. And I was watching something else last night, and I was not able to write down everything, but it had to do with remdesivir and how it's treated and the studies in Africa, how they quit doing certain things. But what did they do here? They put it here.
Well, you know, what this all seems to come down to is when you look at at this from the globalist perspective, the greatest enemy in the world today is the United States. Why? Because we have freedom. Well, we don't have freedom. We don't have the freedom we could have. And then that's my job is, you know, people say this is the greatest country. This is the greatest country in the world. You know, I go, yeah, it is. But, and here's a big but, and this is a huge but. It's nowhere near as great as it could be. It's nowhere near as free as it could be. However, to the people that don't want any freedom, that want, you know, compliant peasant populations to go along and the leaders to live life of extravagance, corruption, and, you know, somewhere between, I don't know, Caligula and, you know, pick any other, you know, some of the, I don't know, Louis the 14th of France. These are the lifestyles these people want. They want absolutely everything. You know, and we had Karen Hoffman talking about the, you know, some of the horrible things they're doing with kids and the whole Jeffrey Epstein thing. But what it comes to is freedom is the problem. And so if you look at the sickest mind out there, Dr. Fascist, Dr. Anthony Fauci, you know, if he wants to be the greatest, you know, or most evil of all time, and I'm not sure he can tell the difference, then if he can do his part to bringing down the United States, to introduce a disease that, you know, when we talk about the Spanish flu, that was gone, and he brings it back, you know, getting back to your main question, which is a huge question, and the question is, you know, when do we stop caring about life? I think it's a cumulative thing. You know, you look at Roe v. Wade, and there was a statistic, some pro-abortion was saying, well, 1 in 4 women have had an abortion. That is a staggering amount, you know, and you think about the other things that are going on. It's just the whole groupthink, you know, when even from the Obama, he doesn't want to bring the hostages back, individuals that are left in other countries. You know, you look at what just happened in Afghanistan, you know, that we've left Americans behind, but brought in 100,000 some Afghanis to create a Muslim population that doesn't believe in freedom. You know, so we've got problems. And now let's bring it down to the personal level of the person, you know, that died. And you think about the hospitals that have a 97% death rate with ventilators, and yet that's what they push. They have remdesivir, which we know causes kidney failure in 20 or 30% of the people who get it, you know, and it makes, you know, a lot of other folks sick. I know someone that had remdesivir, and thank God they're, you know, okay so far, but I don't know. You know, I think of all the people that are taking a vaccine under false pretenses, false information. You know, and here's the other thing too. If the Spanish flu is back, then this vaccine is for something that may not even exist. That's even worse. So people are being killed by something they don't know about. But again, but on the personal level, you know, as far as the hospitals go, to give an empty oxygen tank, to not have proper care, to keep people in the hospital and forcefully give them a treatment they know doesn't work, so they'll die. I don't think it's that Americans stop caring about individual life. I think that certain Americans started caring more about money than life. And as the saying goes, the love of money is the root of all evil. It's not money is the root of all evil, but the love of money is the root of all evil. I still think it's the love of power. I think they go hand in hand together. I think money is the currency of power, if I can make a statement like that. But that's where we stand. That's where we stand today. And it's scary. But that's I really believe that's what's going on. The love of money and power to the exclusion of all else. You know, we've got 9 new billionaires just from the vaccine. And I don't even know what it does. Look, I've got this huge timeline. I've got a big timeline. You know, it goes all the way back through the coronavirus whole thing. And it goes back, you know, we're talking Moderna, 2010. You know, Fauci knows that hydroxychloroquine cures SARS-CoV-1, 2005, mm-hmm. 1986. You know, Fauci first gets involved. I think that's when he knew that this drug that these New York doctors discovered, you know, stopped AIDS, and then and he got rid of it. Ah, there's the bell. You rang?
Yeah, I just wanted to say about Moderna. Did you see the article yesterday that in Sweden they suspended the Moderna vaccine for people under 30?
Interesting. Yeah, I saw it briefly, but like I say, also I was on emails and phone calls last night, you know, really late with all this breaking stuff trying to throw this together. So I missed a lot of things. This is why I count on you, because you fill in so many wonderful places here to you know, complete the picture. So let's talk about that. What did you hear about the Moderna story? Because I think this is quite fascinating.
That's about it. Just that they stopped using it because of precautionary mm-hmm. measures. And one of them was the inflammation to the heart. And all yeah. these young kids that are getting the, well, not even young kids, but adults too, but they're mm-hmm. getting the vaccine. And then, I mean, we're talking not even a day later. Some of them very quickly
yep.
start having, you know, inflammation of the heart. And I was told earlier in the week, I was listening to something, and they said it was irreversible. And people, you know, it's
yeah, it is.
Pretty much a death sentence. I was in, you know, not very much time. But I was listening to someone last night that he did, a doctor last night that did say there are some things that they can do to reverse it. And that wasn't his talk for the show last night. So I have to dig more into that because I'd be curious. Because these healthy people, these kids that were athletic or athletes, and then they get the jab, and then now they can't even participate in sports because of their heart. I mean, that just breaks my heart. It's so sad and so needless when, and the sad thing is, I have to say, someone told me yesterday, too, that in Virginia, two children died of COVID, and that is horrible. Horrible, I have to say, and I don't want to say their life weren't important. What I'm getting at is, we talk about COVID, and more people have died per capita that get the flu and stuff like that in children. And why? I mean, why are they pushing this drug? I have to listen to what I listened to you last night, and then I will come back with more facts again. But there was so much being said that I just could not keep. I was just like, oh my gosh. But the thing is, please, people, you know what to do, but please don't get it. Wait until I can bring up the information I was told yesterday. We'll try to do that tomorrow because it is sad. And not only that, they said that people that got the vaccine that did not have COVID, like for quite a few months since COVID's been going on, all of a sudden, within a period of time after getting the jab, what happens? They get COVID.
Well, that was explained by...
Because they went out and did something and thought, well, I got the jab, now I can do anything I want. Or is it because of what they did getting the jab?
Well, the jab is COVID. I mean, Dr. Judy Mikovits explained that very,
right,
very
right.
clearly.
Right, right. But I'm just saying, it's like, to me, it looks like it's a high likelihood that it's because of the vaccine.
Look at the Delta variant.
I don't want to call it vaccine. It's not.
The Delta variant is being, you know, gotten by people who've had the jab. You know, you don't hear about, you know, the unvaccinated, you know, getting Delta variant because we have a natural immune system. And you talk to Judy Mikovits and you listen to other people, Peter McCullough, there's another doctor talking about this. And I've got an amazing amount of video collections, you know, in yet another computer folder. And you listen to them and they say that there's the virus and there's the spike proteins around the virus. Spike proteins are what, you know, allow the virus to stick to your cells. And they engineered it so it's more, you know, it's easier for it to stick to your cells than it would have occurred naturally. Okay. So it was part of our natural defenses of the fact that the viruses aren't perfect. They aren't, you know, engineered perfectly to, you know, biology takes a long time. Evolution takes a long time. It's a big trial and error process. But if you engineer them, you know, in a lab, to be specifically, you know, gain of function, you know, more deadly, more easily attached to your cells, then the body's already at a disadvantage. You know, so then your immune system has to play catch up, you know, catch up to the technology, not just the naturally occurring virus. And so the spike proteins are every bit as deadly as the virus itself, because the spike proteins contain, I guess, the COVID, you know, DNA that allows this thing to happen. So the spike proteins break off, they form blood clots, they go all over your body, they cross the blood brain barrier because they're really tiny, and they basically have COVID. When they injected animals with just the spike proteins, they got COVID every bit as much as when they injected animals with COVID. And so the thing is, excuse me, the truth is, I don't know the truth. There are so many different conflicting things happening right now, but you have to be open to the possibilities. And what sounds like a wacko conspiracy theory might be the truth. And what we know, what sounds like the truth is actually, you know, the huge evil conspiracy. So everything's backwards, and you have to accept that everything's going to be backwards. And this is where it gets really crazy. We can check live chat in a minute, too. It'd be kind of interesting to see. I can't wait for Bumperjack to sort of, you know, tell us we're all conspiracy theorists. This is just our opinion. We're not following the science, blah, 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 blah. So we know that's coming. But if this is the flu, you know, and I'll talk to I didn't even have a chance to talk to Dr. Zelenko. I was going to, you know, I should let him know at some point during the show. I might take a minute and say, hey, guess what we're talking about? Or at least I'll get him the podcast. You know, so that he knows what's happening here. But this is a very, very crazy situation. Now, we've got a little bit of a lot of folks who are normally here on Thursday are not here. So, Gina, we're going to do a lot of talking today. It's going to be quite interesting. We've got our Jane Adams, who does our medical freedom report right now, couldn't be here, and Claire Lopez, who does our foreign intelligence foreign policy report, she's not going to be here either. So Jonathan and I are going to do extended stuff in about an hour and 15 minutes, and so I'm going to have to actually run away from the microphone for a little bit here in just a second. But I want to go over something first. Let me see if I can find. Here we go. There's something big that's going on here next Tuesday. And so I'm going to be at it. Hopefully we'll get some, I'll talk to David Jones, Center of Volunteers. Hopefully he'll be there. But I want to see if I can meet some of the folks that are going to be speaking. So here's what we've got going. Panhandle Doctors for Truth. And this is a healthcare freedom rally. And it's got a big poster I'm looking at right now. Knowledge is Power. A presentation to discuss the science behind preventative. I wish that was preventive. Seems like preventative seems like a bit long. Anyway, preventative, and early COVID-19 treatments, informed consent, vaccine efficacy, safety, and mandates. The folks that are going to be there, and I can't believe this, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Ryan Cole, and these two I'm not familiar with, Dr. Ben Marble and Jana Benham of INL. I'm not sure what INL is either, but we're going to find out. I mean, there's more going on. This is next Tuesday. Already got my tickets. Yeah, away we go. And so it's going to be a Blue Wahoo Stadium, and that's in Pensacola. And so you can get tickets from, so you get at the gate, just contact the Blue Wahoo Stadium, or we've got here a website, it looks like bit.ly/docsfortruth, docsfortruth. So that's going to be interesting too, to see that. And what I'm hoping to do, my wild dream, of course, is to be able to get our bills on vaccine mandates, on the reform of the FDA, and to these folks. And then let's see what else we need to write. Because if I can start doing, we've already done a bill with Dr. Zelenko, but if we can get some of these other doctors involved or they can endorse our bills, it's going to be huge. It's going to be absolutely huge. All right. So let's, there's many, 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 many stories to talk about. So here's what I'm going to do. like I said, I'm going to leave the microphone real quickly here, and this hopefully I'll be back by the time this works out. So let me just do this. I'll be right back to you in just we'll take a quick break now. Be right back.
This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing. Even fewer have the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's Page One. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com, besmallbusiness, besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
All right, let's get back. Let's see if we can wake everybody up here with my favorite new zapper.
Radio, dangerously cool.
All right, so Gene, go ahead.
I just have a question, and I don't mean to take you off topic, but
oh, please do. We're going to be off topic all day.
Too.
We're going to be off topic a lot today, so it's okay.
But I've been seeing a lot of Brandon
What does that have to do with Biden? How did Biden and Biden get the nickname Brandon?
I have no idea. I saw that in a meme yesterday. I don't know what's going on. I posted it out of curiosity. Let me see if I can find it on my Facebook page, see if anybody made a comment on this. But now, I have another theory, too, and this is starting to circulate as well, that Biden is not quite as mentally incapacitated as we think he is. And that a lot of this is that he's really incredibly dangerous. And what better cover than to have people to believe that you're mentally incompetent? It's like saying, you know, that everything's an accident, you know, as opposed to purposeful. You know, when things happen, well, it's just it's an accidental lab leak. You know, it never happened on purpose. Well, we don't know that. Okay. So there's a lot of, you know, everything, like I say, I think we're being managed. I don't know what the truth is. I absolutely, where did you hear it? I mean, like I say, I first saw it in a meme. I thought, who's Brandon? I'm thinking his son's with Bo and Hunter, you know, so who's Brandon? So I don't know.
I see it all over Facebook. And I was just like, how are they doing that now? Because it's like the F you Biden, what they're saying, and how that was all over Michigan when he was driving through the other day. And in fact, even as he did a flyover, did you see that where the person painted it on in grass or whatever it was? I think it was looked like paint. But anyway, then he gets there and he starts saying, well, all these people, what, 80 million people voted for him, more people than anybody ever. And he, I'm just like, are you kidding me? You know, just, I mean, it's almost like he's so unhinged or just so unaware. But that's what makes me think he knows exactly what he's doing, because he knows he didn't win that many votes. But he gets up there and talks like he did, like, and that's supposed to switch people's opinion of the incompetency that he's bringing. And the sad thing is, if you look through his long career as a politician, what decision has he ever made that's been a good decision for this country? Not one.
No, he's been wrong every time. He's known for being wrong every time. This is
scary. I know, and that is so scary.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. I mean, the whole thing is scary. But you got two things going on here. You've got Democrat Marxists who are willing to steal the election, and you've got Republican geldings who are willing to let them.
Yeah, because they're all one and the same.
They're all the same thing. So, in other words, business as usual is the destruction of America. You look at everything that's going on now, and these people are comfortable with an explosive and suicidal national debt. In fact, they want to do more. They're willing to lie to the American public so much and say that, oh, yeah, we have to raise the debt ceiling to meet our obligations. Not one person except us at Action Radio. Not one voice. I'm even talking about One American News, my favorite news station. Not one broadcast outlet is saying lower the obligations, lower the expenses, lower the debt ceiling except us. We're the only ones saying that. And I don't care if I'm, you know, I'm the voice, you know, with the truth. I've been the whole show's been that way. But the problem is that we don't have, you know, 10 million listeners. I keep upping the ante, you know, but we, you know, 10 million listeners, we could change the country. We could say, look, this is a whole bunch of nonsense, you know, and we could, and I don't know if there's some kind of, you know, if I'm going to get the visit from the Men in Black one day who are going to tap me on the shoulder and say, we're watching you. You know, this is what you need to say from now on. I don't know if that's ever going to, if it ever does, knowing me, I'll probably just say, screw you. And then you'll have to do the show one day. But it's a very interesting thing that they're all saying the same line, that the media, even the independent media, at some point, they get co-opted. Newsmax, Fox News got co-opted. You know, and we knew that when they had the Arizona results. Before the Arizona results, we still don't know the Arizona results, okay, because they're under an ongoing investigation. Yeah, Fox News reported immediately. Newsmax, which used to be, yeah, exactly. All right, so Newsmax used to be a really reliable source, but all of a sudden, you know, Chris Reddy and the gang, they started talking about President Biden before the inauguration. So they got co-opted. One American News, my favorite. I still think they're the best source out there, but the problem is they have not mentioned this. No one has said that this is all a bunch of nonsense. You don't have to raise the debt ceiling to stay solvent. You know, any more than you have to raise your credit card debt limit, you know, to stay financially solvent. No, you pay your bills. You know, you stop buying things. You know, we know how it is on a personal level. States know how it is, too, because a lot of states, it's, you know, constitutionally, they can't have a debt. They must balance their budget every year.
Right.
And so those are, you know, and those are, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, that's exactly it, but I was reading something that Lynn Wood wrote the other day, and he can be pretty controversial himself, but I have to say, it's been something I've been thinking about for a very long time. If you got Marjorie Taylor Greene, and then obviously you got Matt there in Florida. But they're like, they come to me or across to me like rock stars. They love the attention. Okay,
mm-hmm.
They talk a good story, but show no action. And what I mean by that, they'll say, we're going to do this, or I'm going to put a bill in for impeachment. Then you never hear nothing, you know? And it's like, I don't even think they care as much. I think they care more about their image and being out there and being able to fly cross country, do these little, I don't want to say little because they're big, but meet and greet, getting in touch with people and
mm-hmm.
do all this stuff, and they go back to Washington and do nothing. And you can say, well, they're one, two people, they can't make a difference. Heck yes, they can make a difference.
Oh, yeah.
They just choose not to. They're good at talk, but when they put the money where the mouth is, there is none.
Well, you know, they make the what I call the Faustian congressional bargain. And the Faustian congressional bargain is where you sell your soul for a comfy life in Congress. And whereas Matt Gaetz used to call this show when I was back at WBY, 1330 AM, the great WBY, you know, the last great independent radio station of Northwest Florida, which was sold and I was, you know, asked to leave. He used to call the show every week. Now, when he called the show, this is early in his term. In fact, I started March 1st, 2017. Matt Gaetz's first congressional term started January 20th that's when President Trump was sworn in. So Trump's brand new. Matt Gaetz is brand new because the election was in 2016, November. And so he was new and he was great to have on the show because we would talk issues. We would talk about bills and things. In fact, he was the one that took our bill so quickly when we wrote the citizenship question on the census, the mandatory citizenship question on the census bill. He was the one that I wrote it up from callers on the show. We actually wrote it during the show. I'm typing as I'm listening to callers, right? And so then we put it on writeyourlaws.com, got it to Matt Gaetz, and he took it to Washington. I mean, I'm pretty sure he shared it with the Freedom Caucus and the White House. And so things were moving. And that's when Matt Gaetz was doing some really amazing things. And I thought we had our connection to Washington all set. So now we have a sitting congressman who's doing the right things. He's taking our bills. There's no guarantees these bills will pass. And I know that. But the thing is, no one's ever done what we're doing in terms of the actual bill ideas that we have. And so however far it makes it is an accomplishment. And we have a veterans reform whistleblower bill that's in the Veteran Affairs Committee that's stuck there. You know, we have bills in process right now. We have a bill in process at the county level here in Santa Rosa County for an illegal alien free zone. Okay. But again, our ideas are they're so good for everybody. They concern freedom so much that I think that's where we're running into trouble. And the powers that be that want the globalist state, that want to crush freedom, you know, if they can't crush it by politics, they're going to crush it by disease. You know, I really believe this is war. We're at war with these people. It's not a shooting war, but it seems to be on every other front. And so getting back to, effectiveness in Congress and the Faustian bargain, the deal is you will vote with the party. You will say whatever you want, but you won't do anything that we don't approve of, or you don't get your campaign funds. You don't get your committee chairs. You don't get to ride on fancy jets. You don't get to do all the things that you want to do, and you're going to have to campaign without money, and pretty soon you'll be out of here. We'll find someone that will do what we say, and we'll put them in your position, and Congress will go on business as usual. And I think that's the bargain. I think it's the bargain everybody makes. Has Matt Gaetz made it and Marjorie Taylor Greene made it? I don't know. It's looking that way, you know, but then you have like Matt Gaetz, who is fiery in his hearing with Francis Hauger, however you pronounce him, the fake whistleblower from Facebook. I want to talk about that in a minute, too. But he asked some really, you know, good, deep questions, but then he didn't do anything.
He's all talk.
Yeah.
He's all talk. He can thump his chest and make it look like he's doing something for the American people. But will he follow through with anything? Has he followed through with anything so far? I can't say that he has.
Nope, not since hair gel. Hair gel was his downfall.
Exactly.
As soon as the public image, you know, and the national TV spotlight was more important than doing the right thing, that's when we lost him. And so I'm hoping to get him back, you know, by saying, hey, look, dude, you started off, you had the right intentions, the right idea, where'd it go? You know, it's like, filing a bill against Obamacare when you know the president, you know, Obama's going to veto it. Doing an impeachment now, it doesn't matter because Pelosi is going to veto it. So they don't care what you say, they care what you do. And the time to do something was January 6th. And they didn't. They all caved in because I think they got the talk. They all got the talk. Do what we say. Do what the party says. And that would be Schumer and McConnell and Pelosi. I'm sure they had the joint meetings. Do what
we say,
or you're all out of here. And that went on during the hours of the, quote, insurrection, which is really the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. So all these people are walking around upstairs, which was the perfect cover for these folks down below when Congress was sequestered away for their safety. Okay, so here they are below decks. They're in the bowels of the Capitol building. So what did they do for all those hours? Well, they got the talk. Okay, now I can't prove it, you know, but I can't think of anything else that happened because they came back and completely changed all their votes. And you know, all the challenge was gone. You know, all the fire to analyze every state was gone. All the investigation that was going to be done on Biden was gone. And they all lined up and dutifully, you know, kissed the ring. You know, bend over, Bohica, you know, bend over, here it comes again, and dutifully cast the votes for Biden.
Yeah.
You know, and so that was the time to do it. Nobody is saying that Biden couldn't even have been inaugurated because we never went through the proper constitutional challenge of every state and counted the votes. They didn't do that. Okay. So we're still back at January 6th. In terms of the constitutional timeline, we haven't even gotten to January 20th yet. And yet this person's allowed to stay there. And here's the question, though. You know, it's the perfect cover to say that he's mentally incompetent. I don't think he's is anywhere near as mentally incompetent as people say he is. I think he's acting.
I think he's
playing a role.
I started to think that exact same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yep.
Exactly.
Well, he even said in an earlier clip, and we can probably look it up, you know, he says, I'm a political prostitute. I will say what I need to say. I will do what I need to do, you know. And so his love is power.
Yes, like, and Clinton's, I think, evil. He's just evil.
Oh, he is.
You look
evil.
At everything he's mm-hmm. done since he's been in government, evil. I mean, mm-hmm. when you talk about racial stuff and the stuff he said about blacks early on in his career, I'm just dumbfounded that now none of that can be brought up. And just like, as I said the other day too, with all the allegation about who the sexual allegations, and I forget who brought that up, and now that's under wrap and seal. What? Because they probably paid her off to not go farther with it, and so nobody can ever find out what was discussed. That is not right.
Which one's this? Which case is this?
Oh, God, I forget who that was, but that's been years ago. Yes, years ago.
Oh, with
and
Biden?
I think he could have already been in the government, yes, when, yeah, they won't let open up the seal and let people find out what those documents say about what transpired.
Isn't that interesting? That, you know, these go, and
yet
they use the...
taxes. I'm sorry. I'm so sick of hearing about taxes. And that found out to be not a truth either.
Well, his taxes were leaked, and yet they haven't reported on it. So my guess is there's nothing there. You know,
exactly.
Because Trump's a billionaire. Trump probably gets audited every year. I'm sure all the billionaires get audited every year because they make so much money. If they are screwing up or committing a crime, that's where the government's going to get their most money. So it's worth it to investigate the richest people every year because that's where the money is. You don't investigate some, you know, corner shopkeeper. Well, California might, but they're different. But, they go where the money is. So they start with the richest people and the richest corporations.
Money?
What's that now?
Do they ask where he got his money from to buy all those expensive houses and things?
Of course not. He's a Democrat. He's protected. You know, why did half the Bill Clinton cabinet owe federal taxes and not suffer any consequences? You know, this is two-stand. You're a globalist and you're protected, or you're an independent person for freedom and you're not. See, the problem with independent people is they don't tend to associate in a group. They tend to act on their own and be independent. Whereas the groupthink people all get organized in a group. The Democrats operate as a monolith. The Democrats operate as one single unit. All right. Whereas the Republicans are scattered because a lot of Republicans are pretty independent. The problem, once again, is what they're saying and what they're not doing. So let's switch around things a little bit here. Something fascinating happened over the last few days with this person, Frances Haugen, Haugen, a former Facebook employee who looks like Matt Gaetz, by the way. That's why I posted on my Facebook. And I got that from this videographer. Has a website called The Quartering. Q-U-A-R-T-E-R-I-N-G. So the quartering, you know, called this out. See, I suspected something was wrong. And I didn't know what was wrong. I knew something was wrong. And so these people have found out that she's not only, you know, when she was a former Facebook employee involved in digital, you know, stuff, you know, and I forgot what that was. It's probably in the article here. But she was high up in the Facebook organization. Well, you don't get high up in the Facebook organization and turn whistleblower because, you know, Mark Zuckerberg can crush you. You know, he's got the technology. He's got the power. He owns Facebook. He owns like 55% of the controlling shares, which is, you know, that's almost unheard of for any corporation that size. You know, and so they would do something to her. They would dox her. They would cancel her. They would do all these things unless she was acting specifically on his orders. You know, and Facebook doesn't mind regulation because they're going to buy the regulations they want. But what they're going to do is use those regulations to cancel out the people they don't want, which are conservatives, independents, patriots, libertarians, Christians, Jews, you know, people that anybody that has a religious or a personal belief about freedom, they don't want because they want to buy the elections. They want to run the country. This is the power mad, you know, we've got it coming from you know, one side, you got Muslim fundamentalists coming into this country who want to destroy our Constitution because it represents freedom. You've got these secular folks that want to destroy freedom because they believe in the global world that they want to run. Everybody thinks they can run the world. It's the same old story, the love of power. And so this person comes up on Facebook, and it's, you know, Frances Haugen. And she's, you know, attractive and well-spoken and, you know, she's incredibly smart. She's got all kinds of degrees and things. She's got, you know, computer science and stuff and an MBA from Harvard. So she's no dummy. And so how she could rise up as far as she could in Facebook and suddenly turn whistleblower, it just looked false. But what's fascinating is how fast people called it this time. You know, I was watching Tucker Carlson last night, who usually is with the news, like most of the news media, about a year late. So when we first reported that I had Bill Gertz on the show back in, I think it was March or April of 2020, talking about the Wuhan lab as the origin point of the China virus, the Wuhu flu, you know, the coronavirus as we know it, COVID-19. We talked about that so early that when it came again, you know, this year, I was already bored with the story. It's like, you know, and people are making, and I got even canceled on Facebook for reporting the repeat of the story. I said, but this is old news. We talked about this over a year ago. And this is what David Jones is finding out when we talked about Santa Rosa Volunteers. He says, you know, we're months ahead of everybody else. I was like, yeah, welcome to the party, you know, because it was fairly new that we're working together. But this stuff has been out for so long. The you know, the Wuhan lab and coronavirus is old news as far as we're concerned here because we broke the Bill Gertz story. Now, what's interesting is that the Washington Times that Bill Gertz writes for scrubbed the stories. I couldn't find them when I went back to look for them a year later. And yet then they you know, and I'm sure they repost them now because it's common news. But it's just fascinating what's going on with the Facebook thing. I got an article here I'm going to get to in a second, but I wanted your take on it, Gene, unless you're deeply involved in working all the many other things to keep us going here. And I'll tell you what, I'll wait till I get the hotel bell, and then I shall get back in here. But Gene's not here. Okay.
Yeah.
So what are your initial impressions on the whole Facebook before Congress? I mean, that was an amazingly fast put together hearing. All of a sudden, there she is. I'm like, oh, right from 60 minutes to Congress.
No, I think you're spot on. It's not what we think it is. Yeah, or it's not what she portrays to be. There's a reason for it. And if nothing else, it's for them to even, for the stocks to toilet, and then for them to pick up even more stocks at a cheaper rate.
Yeah.
But there's something. Yeah, it's not that she's doing it out of the goodness of her heart and she really wants to expose something. Oh, gosh, no. You're exactly right.
Well, it's not just me. She's already been discredited by a whole bunch of sources. But, you know, it all happened over, like, say, the last couple of days. Let me put this thing here. This is from this website called The Quartering. And this is October 5th, so we're talking 2 days ago. This is how fast the news is moving now. He says, according to CNN, the former Facebook employee whose leaks triggered some of the most intense scrutiny in the company's history revealed her identity Sunday night. So whistleblowers usually want whistleblower protection. They don't want their identity known. Okay?
Right.
Remember how much secrecy there was with Eric Chiramella, the alleged whistleblower, which actually turned out to be Lieutenant Vindman, the Ukrainian naturalized American who almost was the Secretary of Defense for Ukraine. You know, and if he had been, he could have had his United States citizenship revoked. That's why I don't think he took it. Anyway, so whistleblowers are usually pretty quiet. They don't want the attention. These are people that are forced to do the right thing against their personal best interests and security and job. Because whistleblowers usually get fired. You know, she wasn't fired. She left. You know, and did she leave for the purposes of doing this? How long did she leave? This is where it's interesting.
Oh, I'm sure
and, you know,
she did. I'm sure it was all rigged. She probably got a nice amount of money from Facebook to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he could do it, too, because he's got, you know, billions, you know, he makes billions of dollars. And here's the other thing, too. Well, this started with the remember the shutdown of social media Monday?
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Yeah.
We spent a whole show talking about what did they do during the shutdown? What did they reset? What have they redone? So the timeline now is Sunday night, the whistleblower. I just had the revelation. So Sunday night, the whistleblower goes on 60 Minutes, Frances Haugen.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, social media shuts down for a bunch of hours. I think they did something. They reset something. We went over in detail exactly all the things that they could have done. The next day, Tuesday, she's before the committee. All right? And so in this whole big, sham investigation where the Democrats were nice to her. So you know there's a problem. I said, wait a minute, why are the Democrats being nice to her? That was my first clue something was really wrong. Because they're not nice to anybody that's a whistleblower or trying to, bat after one of their favorite corporations, you know, the socialist media controlling Facebook. Especially
right.
When Ed Markey was nice to her, I said, that's it. This is rigged. I don't know how it's rigged, but something's really wrong. And so we talked about it. I think yesterday we covered this, and then here we are today. So this guy says, Quartering says, the most scrutiny of the company's history, Sunday night. Okay, Frances Haugen, former Facebook product manager with stints at several other big tech companies, yeah, so she's known, went public with an appearance on 60 Minutes. Haugen is set to testify. This is written before she was before Congress. Haugen is set to testify in front of a U.S. Senate subcommittee on Tuesday. Here's what we know about her so far. Haugen grew up attending the Iowa caucuses with her parents, according to her personal website. That experience instilled, quote, a strong sense of pride in democracy and responsibility for civic participation. All right. And so as soon as anybody uses the buzzword democracy, I know they don't stand the republic. And I know they're for the globalist, you know, the big picture, because democracies are used to buy votes from the people with false information to get the power that the leaders want. That's what a democracy is all about. It's about, you know, it's about propaganda and coercive voting through misinformation and ignorance so that the power keeps accumulating. And then eventually you get socialism. And that's where we're headed now. That's why democracies don't work, right? It says also back here, after studying electrical and computer engineering. Yeah, this is Frances Haugen. She's no dummy, okay? Electrical and computer engineering, you know, followed by an MBA. Haugen worked at several tech firms starting in 2006, including Google, Pinterest, and Yelp. She specializes in, I don't even know what this is, algorithmic product management. She manages algorithms. She's one of those people that says, who gets highlighted and who doesn't, who gets trended and who gets shadow banned, who's fake news and who's real. She's like the information manager. That's what it seems to me. If you manage the algorithms, don't you have control of the whole shebang? Aren't the algorithms the rules that they work by?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what she did. And all of a sudden she's all concerned with girls and eating disorders and all this other kind of stuff. She doesn't know anything about that. She's not a psychologist. You know, she's operating in an area that she knows nothing about, yet that's where she's supposed to be an expert. I just thought of that too right now. You know, why, I mean, of all the people you'd have there, why wouldn't, and there were no other people, there were no other witnesses too. There were no child psychologists. There were no people. There were no parents who had victims, whose daughters were victims of, you know, all kinds of self-identity, self-conscious, self-image problems, self-esteem problems. There was nobody else there except her. That was suspicious too. So all these things are going on. So she's an algorithmic product manager, all right, and has worked. And has worked on several ranking algorithms similar to the one Facebook uses to organize its main news feed. So she's a propagandist, and this is according to her prepared testimony obtained by CNN on Monday. She's scheduled to appear Tuesday. Yada 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 yada. We've got quotes here working at four major tech companies that operate different types of social networks. I've been able to compare and contrast how each company approaches and deals with different challenges. She wrote this in a prepared testimony. Wow. And that's just one site. And we've got more. Yeah, we've got lots more. So, you know, I've got several articles on this. I want to just spend a little bit of time on it. And then, of course, we have lots of other things we can cover. So we can still go back to the Department of Justice. So the question is then, was this all a cover before the story that dropped off the news, which was the shutdown of social media. Was this time to coincide with that shutdown so it would only be news for the day and it would be gone? Nobody's talking about the shutdown anymore. In fact, I just realized it myself. We're not talking about the shutdown anymore because we're talking about her.
Right.
That's weird. Yeah. I'm taking a break for a couple minutes here. I kind of like this idea of just...
One would think, okay, Facebook went down, or one of them went down, but to have them all go down at the same time and just so unexpectedly, or so everybody says unexpectedly, yeah, there's more to it than what we know, put it that way.
Well, here's a question too. And like I said, I'll play some stuff, so we'll get back to this question, you know, when we get back. But how come nobody asked her why Facebook shut down? It's the day after. Not a single person asks her why the social media network shut down. She's the algorithms guru. She's the one that works with this stuff. She knows exactly what happens at Facebook because that was her job. She's a computer engineer, electrical engineer. She knows exactly how these networks work because she was managing the algorithms. How come nobody asked her why the network shut down? Jean? And then we'll take a break.
Well, really, I don't think they care because they've got their own agenda.
Mm-hmm. Or they were
and
told
they,
not
who
to
knows,
ask.
They may have been all involved. I mean, not all, but some of them may have been involved in it too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting so you can't trust anybody anymore. All right, let me take a quick break here. We're going to play a couple things and be right back. And we'll tell you more about Action Radio. Here at Action Radio, we are looking for sponsors. We have 30 and 60-second spots available for your announcements. And we have 3-minute live call-ins to talk about your products and services available. Action Radio is the next evolution beyond talk radio. Join us and let us help your business evolve. Think about being a sponsor of the future and not just a listener. And help us help your business grow as you help us plunge headlong into breaking new ground here on Action Radio every day. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. Yeah, like I say, things are a little scattered today because, you know, two of our regular reporters aren't here. And I only found out, you know, most of this, you know, in the last little while. And then, of course, last night, furiously going back and forth trying to arrange, you know, this with the breaking news that I got from Jonathan Mosley, who we're going to talk to in about 42, 43 minutes, something like that. Yeah, 42, 43. My math sucks. Don't ever ask me math questions. So this is, and the title of the show today, has the Spanish flu been reconstructed and released with COVID, which is going to be just a blockbuster. But I'm still communicating with our guest, John Collins. So I want to make sure that you know, we can get him connected to the show here. And so there's some things we're working on here. So like I say, if I seem a little scattered, and if he isn't able to appear because we have a problem connecting, then I'll just invite him back another time. But I know Judy Mikovits is going to call in too, and that's going to be great. So it's a busy day. It's a busy day here at Action Radio, and a lot of it we're just kind of doing on the fly just because it's live radio, and this is what makes things crazy. So back to my question, which I've now forgotten. Gene, welcome back. I know I asked a big question. I forgot to write it down as I was, you know, doing stuff.
The whole thing about Facebook, all the social media is going down and the whistleblower. Yeah, you would think, oh, yeah, someone's finally speaking up. It's not what it seems.
Yeah. Well, I got an article here from Daily Wire, and I couldn't put this on Facebook, so this is the one I want to go over now. I figured the one they won't let me publish, that's the good one. And so She always has a big picture on the front here. Facebook whistleblower as leftist activist repped by lawyer for quote whistleblower behind Trump impeachment. This is fascinating. So let me translate the headline in English, actually, you know, covering some of the article. So this is Daily Wire, and this is by Luke Rosiak from October 5th. So we're talking 2 days ago, available at dailywire.com. He says the Facebook whistleblower, Francis Haugen, has a record of donations to far-left Democrats and a history of raising issues about purported bias while at previous employers. A Daily Wire, this is Daily Wire review found. And so purported bias, these are like the people that say, when you try to fire them because they're incompetent, you're discriminating against me because I am, you know, fill in the blank, whatever the minority category is. And so this I'm wondering if that's her. You're just doing this because I'm a woman kind of thing. Well, we'll find out. The article says she is working with Democrat operatives to roll out her complaint and has the same lawyers as the anonymous Ukraine whistleblower, that's Lieutenant Vindman, whose allegations led to Donald Trump's impeachment, but who reportedly turned out to be then Vice President Joe Biden's top advisor on the country. Well, now, isn't that interesting? So Biden, I think Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, didn't he work with Biden for like 20 years as an advisor? I mean, this is a Biden racket. You know, so if you want to go after these people for racketeering, it's like Obama and the Obama folks are actually running it. That's the crazy part. These are Biden people being run by Obama, Susan Rice, Valerie Jarrett. I haven't heard from Michelle in a while either, but these are the people. You know, this is the deep state, folks. This is what it looks like. This is who they are. All right. So now they've rolled out Francis Haugen, you know, to play this role to all of a sudden cover for the blackout of social media where they did whatever they did that we don't know yet. It's just the timing is, you know, obviously this stuff is rearranged. Here's the problem, though. These people have years. They have all day long to plan stuff. So they work out all the details ahead of time. They run computer scenarios. They do dry runs of this. This is why it all works so perfectly, because they plan this for years while you're at your job, earning a living, feeding your family, you know, commuting, you know, doing all the things you have to do to keep life going. These people are planning. They plan all the time. And then they just roll this stuff out like, oh, well, look what just happened. What a surprise. Back to the article. In a previous role at Pinterest, Francis Haugen was behind, quote, a recent change to give users the option to filter searches for specific skin tones. Well, now, isn't that interesting? To talk about, I don't even know what to make of that. This is a gigster. I don't even know how that works. At Gigster, she gave a talk on, quote, on how, quote, if we don't build with an eye towards inclusion, we can end up enshrining bias. All right. So she's like an affirmative action crusader, you know, diversity person. And so she's perfect for Facebook. You know, the idea that she's a whistleblower is hysterical now. The article says in 2015, she complained that Google was not inclusive enough of women. See, there you go. Told you. Thought so. Saying, I didn't realize the way I had been worn down by being a woman in tech. The last team I was on at Google, it had a transsexual, you know, engineering director. And as a result, we had more transsexual women than cis women. And I despise that word because it doesn't mean anything. Sounds too close to sissy. I don't believe in where did that word come from anyway? Well, I'll see that in a second. This is then cis women on our team, which also says something sad about the number of women in tech. Okay. Now here's a woman who has a computer and electrical engineering degrees. She's got an MBA from Harvard. She's working in the top tech companies in the world, probably making a huge salary. And now she's complaining that she's being unfairly treated as a woman. Jean, as a woman, what do you think? I think I caught her at a busy moment.
You know, no. Okay. The thing is, what I think really, I don't like it when anybody uses that as an excuse. Oh, I'm a woman, so then you treat me differently. It's like, I don't get it. People are, I'm a woman, you shouldn't treat me like this. But yet they want to be treated like the boys. So it's like, mm-hmm. People talk out of both sides of their mouth. How do you want to be treated? My thinking is, treat people like you want to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
Me personally, there's way more going on than what the eye can see. And when they start saying stuff like that, it's like, okay, you lost me.
Yeah. Well, she's not the first to be, outed as a Democrat operative. People who complain in the halls of Congress, they go up to senators and say, how can you do this? You know, I'm just one person. Well, apparently that one person might be backed by George Soros or be part of the high up in the Democrat Party or have contributed for years to the Democrats or be, campaign worker or something else. It turns out these people are never just the innocent little lambs, the individuals they portray themselves as. And so we get another one here. We're talking about Haugen again. The article says Haugen has made more than 20 federal campaign contributions since 2016. Oh, that's when Trump was elected. Oh, yeah. All of which have gone to Democrats. And this is according to the Federal Election Commission data. On January 13th, 2020, Hagan sent money to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez congressional campaign. Oh, well, that just tells me everything. And a further contribution to her, quote, Courage to Change Political Action Committee. One of the most frequent recipients of her donations was the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. The Senate Subcommittee on Consumer Protection, Product Safety, and Data Security, which is chaired by Senator Richard Blumenthal, Democrat of Connecticut, oh, he's something else too, invited her to testify to the panel on Tuesday to air her complaints. See, this is interesting, all right? So the fact that Blumenthal invited her, well, how did he know her? How did he know she even existed? She's a whistleblower. She's supposed to be protected. There are federal laws that protect whistleblowers. And one of the first things they protect is their identity, okay? So they can't have this happen. So not only is she known, her name is known. She goes on 60 Minutes. Wow, what a coincidence. And then 2 days later, she's in front of Congress at the invitation of one of the most partisan Democrats that ever existed, Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut. Oh, come on. As Gene would say, are you kidding me? We're going to make that are you kidding me report now with Gene on Tuesday mornings. All right. So this is fascinating. Blumenthal invited her to testify to the panel on Tuesday to air her complaints, which consist in part of contending that Facebook did not censor enough speech. We're going to talk about that in a minute. Facebook did not censor enough speech. She says she was motivated to take action after a friend became radicalized by misinformation. We need to stop here for a second and analyze this just a little bit. You know, this is obviously the right article. I got several articles, but this is the best one. Again, look for the article that Facebook won't let you print. That's the one you need to go with. She says she was motivated to take action after a friend became radicalized by misinformation. Okay, anybody that uses the term misinformation is an information manager, is an information censor, is a fact checker. Because you listen to conservatives, we never talk about misinformation. We say fake news, okay? You know, this is how you tell the radicals by the information they use. If you want to know who's not a conservative, who's a liberal activist, listen to the term alt-right. The conservatives never talk about the right or the alt-right. We never use the word right. We use conservative. We use patriot. We use, libertarian, independent. We never characterize ourselves as the right or the alt-right. Doesn't happen. That's a leftist term. And then the leftist mentions some horrible alt-right person that's really just a wacko, you know, leftist, neo-Nazi, communist or something like that and say, well, that's your person. I'm like, who are they? I have Richard Spencer name comes to mind. I don't even know. That might be the wrong person. But I have friends, when I still have friends on the left who are on my Facebook page before I had to, you know, ask them to go because they were canceling me on Facebook. You know, they said, well, this is your guy. I'm like, who the hell is it? I've never heard of that person. Nah, he's your guy. He's all right. He's yours. Okay. So this is where, and radicalized is not a term that you hear conservatives use much either, but how do you get radicalized by misinformation? In other words, they're saying if you don't get their information, you might think something else. What they're really saying is you're not thinking correctly. And they're the thought police and they will tell you what to think correctly. And if you don't think correctly, they will arrest you. They will put you in Facebook jail. Here's the thought, Gene. Do you think that Facebook actually came up with that term, Facebook jail? Jail implies that you did something wrong. See, I never say I was in Facebook jail. I say I was a political prisoner of Facebook, which means they did something wrong. I didn't do anything wrong by what I published because I'm a free person. I have a First Amendment right, and they can't touch the data. That's the deal. It's like AT&T and the phone lines. AT&T used to rent you the phone line, and you could say whatever you wanted, and you had other laws that you were responsible to, like if you threatened the president. You broke the law. AT&T doesn't enforce that. The federal government does. Okay. It's like the same thing. We're going to get into this in a bit. I'm going to talk about Section 230 and our bill. Basically says that you can't touch what goes on in the content because we already have obscenity laws. We have pornography and child pornography laws. We have laws that govern, what can be said. And if you break those laws, you're subject to arrest and prosecution, right? Especially child pornography, which is absolutely disgusting. Besides being illegal, it's horrible. But the thing is that we don't need Facebook to police that. That's being done by other laws and other departments and other divisions. The Department of Justice, runs the obscenity pornography law. That's what they do. So why would you have it? Why would you give that power to Facebook? Yeah, but it's just fascinating the way they talk about this. Anyway, Gene, I know I have to go for a few minutes. So if you want to hop in now, I want to talk about our Section 230 bill after this. I think we've covered this pretty well. Do you have a minute right now, or
I have a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, it's. It is so crazy. Yeah. The thing is, though, too, with what she was saying, bottom line is when you look at Facebook and stuff like that, if there's anybody that puts anything negative about Biden right away, it's fact-checked. Mm-hmm. So to say, oh, the person, oh, my gosh, I just think it's crazy. And bottom line is this, man, it can go both ways. But yet one person has one person that is having difficulties or is radicalized. If any, I don't know, I guess I live under a rock, but if you can become radicalized by Facebook or something like that, we're really a hurting society.
Yeah. And when they say radicalized, is it, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get it. Yeah. Excuse me. And then for this person to be brought there right at fast, I mean, what is it? Less than 24 hours later? It's like they don't have anything better they're doing?
Well,
I think
it's worse than that.
The whole thing doesn't make sense.
Here's a question. If you believe, as I believe and you believe and some 80 million people across the country believe, that voted for Donald Trump, that he won, plus all the, probably another 80 million that believe it also, even though they either didn't vote or voted for Biden or discussed it or something like that, have they been radicalized by misinformation? And
yeah.
Do they consider misinformation saying that Trump won when we all know that Trump won? Because intellectually impossible to believe that, you know, sleepy Joe Biden from his basement with eight people at a rally beat Donald Trump. That's impossible to believe. Unless, of course, you know the election was stolen because you did it. You know, and you don't want other people to believe that, so you condemn that information. Is that being radicalized by misinformation? I bet you they think that.
Oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, I would assume so. Well, you shouldn't make assumptions, but yeah.
Well, I make assumptions all the time. Are you kidding? But here's the trick, though. You have to investigate your assumptions. You know, the two basic sayings of the show, assumptions is stronger than truth, and perception is stronger than reality. So if you change people's perception, you can change their reality. If you give them false assumptions, you know, you can hide the truth. And these things are just turning out to be, you know, more true all the time. I can continue with this article. Let me do that. If you have to check out for a little bit, just feel free, and then we'll get you back as soon as you're back.
All right.
But,
thank you.
Yeah. No problem at all. Yeah. So, like I say, normally producers and show people can talk to each other, right next to each other. Yeah, but we can't do that, you know, because Gene's, you know, a long way away. And so we're running the show. This truly is a national show. You know, Gene's up north. I'm down here in Florida. You know, we got folks calling in from Sacramento and from Pennsylvania, you know, at various times. It's quite an interesting thing that we do here. And so I'm going to play my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece in a little bit, but I want to go over the rest of this article because I think it's fascinating. And so again, Daily Wire, excuse me. I'm going to get my dailies. Luke Rosiak, R-O-S-I-A-K, October 5th, so 2 days ago. Daily Wire, Facebook whistleblower is leftist activist, represented by lawyer for whistleblower behind Trump impeachment. So, I mean, it's hard to write a headline for this article because there's so much stuff here. So let me scroll back down to where it says she was radicalized. Where is that information here? Because her stuff gets even deeper and deeper as we go into this article. I can see why Facebook banned it. Right? So the article continues. Despite having money for political donations in January 2020, Hagen had a $44,000 federal tax lien placed against her for unpaid taxes. This is another thing that's very common with leftists, I find. They don't pay their taxes. They want to have you pay your taxes, but they don't pay their taxes. Okay, and this is according to public records reviewed by the Daily Wire. I think I have to look at the Daily Wire more often. They seem to be doing some amazingly good reporting. Anyway, the lien was released on May 17th, 2021. A few months ago, did she suddenly pay $44,000 in taxes, or did somebody else suddenly pay $44,000 in taxes so that she'd be free and clear when it came time to testify before Congress? Just a thought. Call me skeptical. That's my job. Back to the article. Her lawyers are now seeking to raise $50,000 on GoFundMe money they say will go to covering her legal expenses for the attorneys who are otherwise working pro bono. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, back up. Hold the presses. This is a person who has one of the highest jobs in high tech. She actually creates and manages algorithms for Facebook. You can't tell me she wasn't earning $300,000 a year, $500,000 a year. $1 million a year? They can afford it. She's the product. Let me scroll back up again. She is the What's your job here? Just, as we scroll back, let me see if I can find it here. Okay, I have to scroll back up too far up in the article, and there's too much of this. But she was she managed the algorithms. I mean, this is a smart woman, you know, and she can't come up with $50,000 out of her, you know, outrageous six-figure salary or even seven-figure salary. That doesn't make any sense to me. Okay, so anyway, so she's got free lawyers, and she's got a GoFundMe account. Oh, please. Back to the article. Those lawyers are Whistleblower Aid, a group founded by Mark Zaid, Z-A-I-D, who previously represented the national security official who alleged that Donald Trump inappropriately pressed the Ukraine president on a phone call to, in turn, investigate whether Joe Biden inappropriately pressed the country to drop an investigation into his son's firm, Burisma. Okay, so this is when Trump released the phone call, the transcript, and just blew all this nonsense out of the water. But that's what they did. They're making up an impeachment. You have three made-up impeachments. There should be some consequences for that. Anyway, the identity of that whistleblower who did not have firsthand knowledge of the call was fiercely shrouded, but some outlets reported it as Eric Chiramella. So they're actually saying who it is now. I mean, I've been saying it for about a year, you know. I remember Sebastian Gorka said it, and a few other folks, you know, had the courage to say it on their show. It says, but some outlets reported that it was Eric Chiramella, Joe Biden's top advisor on Ukraine. What a surprise. Gee, these people are either associated with Biden or Facebook. They keep coming up, the same people. The article says that position meant he could have been personally implicated by any misconduct Joe Biden may have undertaken around Ukraine during the Obama administration. It could have also been motivated by personal loyalty. Chiramella was close enough to Biden that Biden invited him as a guest to a State Department dinner. This is fascinating. In a rollout that appeared carefully crafted by political and legal professionals, the allegation was leveled, led to a series of moves culminating in the impeachment of Trump, and shrank away without the whistleblower's name and the potential conflicts it could bring ever being revealed. Yeah, there's a huge mystery surrounding the impeachment and all these other folks that are doing what they're doing. And we shall see. We shall keep going. Article says, before filing his complaint with the Intelligence Community Inspector General, the whistleblower met with staff for Democrat Adam Schiff. Now, we know about him. Shifty Schiff, that's what he gets called. Schiff later claimed, quote, we have not spoken directly with the whistleblower, which was nonsense. A statement the Washington Post said was flat out false. The whistleblower, meanwhile, concealed from the inspector general that he had previously spoken to Congress about it. The complaint was filed the same month Schiff hired Sean Misko, an NSC, the National Security Council colleague of Chiramella. The Washington Examiner reported. Okay, now we get back to Hagen. Okay, this is Francis Hagen, the Facebook alleged whistleblower. Hagen's case has some similarities to the Ukraine impeachment case. She carefully fed internal Facebook documents to the Wall Street Journal, working with Zaid and his law partners, John Tai, the former Obama State Department official, and Andrew Bakaj, who worked for Democratic senators, including Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. See, they're all one big happy family. Okay, now I'm having trouble following the personality, so you probably are too. Okay, I understand that. That makes a lot of sense. But I want to get this article to you, and we're almost done. But this is quite fascinating. Last little bit, the public relations firm of the former Obama aide Bill Burton, a company called Bryson Gillette, I've heard them before, helmed by a raft of Democrat operatives, is providing Hagen with, quote, strategic communications guidance. Helping run what one Republican called an incredibly well-orchestrated communications campaign. The Free Beacon reported this, okay? Bryson Gillette also runs publicity for the nonprofit Center for Humane Technology, well, that's interesting, which has waged a policy war with Facebook. Have they? Jen Psaki, Biden's press secretary, worked for Bryson Gillette as a senior advisor until September 2020 with the Center for Humane Technology as one of her clients, according to ethics filings obtained by the Daily Wire. Bryson Gillette did not return a request for comment. There you go. They're all in this together. Okay, so why do I bring all this up? Well, the reason I bring all this up is because Congress, you know, the reason that this Facebook operative is there is that Congress wants to do something. And Facebook and high tech, big tech, want to make sure that whatever Congress does benefits them. See, a lot of companies really like regulation. You know, they say they're they want smaller government and fewer regulations. That's not true. You have to consider the regulations include price supports. Price supports are where farmers are paid not to grow things. Okay, that's how it works. All right, so you've got all this stuff going on here. As far as I'm trying to do computer stuff at the same time. So again, this is a little bit of a crazy show this morning. I know I was looking at my bill. I wanted to get my bill, so I'm gonna try and multitask here at the same time. And you know what I think I'll do? I'll take a break. Let me explain this to you first, and then I'll play our piece, and then I'll come back to you. The problem with the regulations is that you know Facebook's going to design regulations that they want. They're going to pay for the regulations they want. They're going to pay for regulations that will allow them to continue to shadow ban, censor, limit, get rid of, suppress, oppress, remove things they don't like, which generally means conservatives, people that know that Trump won the election, anybody that reports news they don't want, the truth about COVID, that the vaccines don't work, you know, all these kind of things. They're going to try and suppress that. So if they can get the regulations that continue their power that they have under Section 230 right now, then they'll get even more power. Okay. And so a lot of companies, you know, Archer Daniels Midland has an ethanol subsidy that's required by regulation. There's regulations that put 10% of your gasoline in as, you know, corn oil. Okay. So ethanol, they call it ethanol, but it's really, you know, it makes your car smell like salad dressing. So that's a regulation. That's something they bought. They've guaranteed a share, 10% of the share of gasoline, which should be, gasoline should be petroleum. It shouldn't be salad dressing. Okay. That's a regulation. So companies use regulations all the time to make their lives easier and better. Most regulations, I really believe, help corporations because the corporations who write those regulations. Look at the Big Pharma bought immunity from their products. That's a pretty good deal. How do they do that exactly? You know, and so this is just fascinating how this all works. Okay, so I'm going to put that aside for now. I want to play you a couple of things I'm a little bit behind this week on creating my founding documents piece because all the stuff that happened last night that we're hoping to arrange here in the next 20 minutes when Jonathan joins us and then 20 minutes past the next hour when we hopefully have John Cullen and Dr. Judy Mikovits joining us for a little chat here. It's going to be fun. It's going to be really interesting. So let me play a couple things here. This is something I haven't done for a while. Play you two little well, let's talk about the Sedition Act. Let me play you that piece because this is one I made a few weeks ago. The Sedition Act, basically when you talk treason against your own government, you're subverting your own government. And so what's happening is, and the reason I'm picking this one today is because these people, the Facebooks and the Congress and the Democrats are all saying, you know, you're anti-government. Remember when Clinton had that thing? You know, you're anti-American. You know, you're speaking against your government. And you can't do that. You know, you can't report that you think the election was a fraud, even though it's a fraud. You can't do that. And so what they're going to try and do is bring about some version of the Sedition Act in terms of protecting Facebook with regulation to give them the power to remove things that they think are seditious. So this might be the one to play for right now. So let me play this, and I'll be back in a bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. This week, I want to break from the Federalist and Anti-Federalist papers to consider one of the many aberrations in the early days of the land of the free. That is the Sedition Act of 1798. Granted, this is always grouped with the companion bills on aliens, but I see them as separate issues. Why would a new government formed from colonies under rules of sedition from a foreign monarch bring about that same tyranny into our government so early in its existence? The Constitution was ratified on September 17, 1787. The Bill of Rights was ratified on December 15, 1791. So it was already in the supreme law of the land that Congress could make no law that abridged the freedom of speech, thus making any subordinate law on sedition unconstitutional automatically. And yet, it happened. All power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. Therefore, if you have a government of good laws and yet bad officials who crave the preservation of power more than the alleged guarantees of freedom, freedom takes second place. You can see that in evidence throughout the entire government response to a coronavirus that would have run its course naturally in about 10 weeks, just like the flu every year, and would have been gone by the summer of 2020 when all viruses fade until the winter. And yet, look at the massive amount of power taken from the people in a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. Sedition is defined in my online dictionary as conduct or speech inciting people to rebel against the authority of a state or monarch. So what did the government put into a law that so obviously came from the former ruler of the colonies into the new government of the United States? The Sedition Act is titled An Act for the Punishment of Certain Crimes Against the United States. In other words, conduct or speech that criticizes the government. Where have we heard that before? Section 1 of the Sedition Act reads, Be it enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America, in Congress assembled, that if any persons shall unlawfully combine or conspire together with intent to oppose any measure or measures of the government of the United States, which are or shall be directed by proper authority, or to impede the operation of any law of the United States, or to intimidate or prevent any person holding a place or office in or under the government of the United States from undertaking, performing, or executing his trust or duty, and if any person or persons with intent as aforesaid shall counsel, advise, or attempt to procure any insurrection, riot, unlawful assembly, or combination, whether such conspiracy, threatening, counsel, advice, or attempt shall have the proposed effect or not, he or they shall be deemed guilty of a high misdemeanor. This, of course, violates the entire First Amendment, except with regard to religion. It gets worse. Section 2 says in part, And be it further enacted, that if any person shall write, print, utter, or publish, or shall cause or procure to be written, printed, uttered, or published, or shall knowingly and willingly assist or aid in writing, printing, uttering, or publishing any false, scandalous, and malicious writing or writings against the government of the United States, or either House of the Congress of the United States, or of the President of the United States, with intent to defame the said government, or either House of the said Congress, or the said President, or to bring them, or either of them, into contempt or disrepute, or to excite against them, or either or any of them, the hatred of the good people of the United States. In other words, saying anything against the government of the United States or anyone in it is a crime punishable by jail and fines. This effectively creates political prisoners in the United States, much like the innocent people in the D.C. Gulag jail for being in the Capitol building January 6th. If that were not bad enough, within the Sedition Act is probably the most dangerous provision to individual liberty that I have yet seen in the founding documents, and provides a shocking precursor to the future neutralization of our jury system and the supremacy of the government courts over the people. Section 3. And be it further enacted and declared that if any person shall be prosecuted under this act for the writing or publishing any libel aforesaid, it shall be lawful for the defendant upon the trial of the cause to give an evidence in his defense, the truth of the matter contained in publication charged as a libel, and the jury who shall try the cause shall have a right to determine the law and the facts under the direction of the court, as in other cases. The key words here are under the direction of the court. The whole point of a jury is to not only determine the guilt of the defendant, the restitution in a civil case, but most important for the jury is to determine whether the laws implied are fair, just, constitutional, and are not arbitrary and capricious reservoirs of unlimited government power over the people. Jurors can do whatever they want because they are the representatives of the people over the judges who work for the government and therefore work for the people. And yet, as virtually every judge instructs their juries, that they can only judge the facts of the case and not the law. That lie is repeated every day in courts all across the country. And now I see where it came from. Section 3 is really saying that the juries, and therefore the people, are under the direction of the court. What the Sedition Act really does is makes criticism of the government a crime, and allows government judges to direct the juries that would hear any case under this act, thus destroying the right of free speech and to redress grievances against the government and to due process and the right to a jury trial of one's peers. One could imagine anyone charged under this act would be guilty until proven innocent and then ruined by government if they were proved innocent. Can you think of any parallels to the rights of free speech today? The Sedition Act was approved July 14, 1798, signed by John Adams, President of the United States. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Dangerously cool. Okay, I'm back, and it's this is a fascinating day. Like I say, we're kind of, you know, a little bit on improv this morning, just because of the rearrangement of guests last minute, the last minute stories, but that's okay. We always do the best we can to present you things as they happen, you know, and as you know, and the weird part is we're usually up front, you know, not by like a day or two, but you know, 6 months to a year. A lot of times with a lot of things we report, we're certainly caught, you know, the way before it even started on COVID being not COVID being a hoax, but the COVID response to it being a total hoax. And so we were right on that, and we stuck by it, and we've continued to be right. Gene's back. So let's check in and see if you have any revelations on the Sedition Act you know, the new regulations coming for Facebook or anything else you want to talk about. If not, I have I've got another article that I want to get into a bill. I think people will find that, you know, as dry as legislation gets. You know, this one's, I think, it's going to be pretty easy to understand exactly what we're doing. Gene, do you have a comment or question? Or do you,
I just want to make a comment, because I said that I talked to someone who said yesterday two children from Virginia died of COVID.
Oh.
And your guest that's coming up texted me or emailed me a chart, and he also said that nobody under the age of, you know, 15 or younger than 15 has died. So I don't know if the person I talked to yesterday, those people were over 15. I'm not sure, but I will have to do more digging. But regardless, it's only we can do what's best for ourselves, making the decisions we make with the information we have. And please don't just listen to one set of information. Do your digging and find things out, because I don't want to lead people astray, but yet I don't want people to do things that is going to do harm for themselves for the rest of their life, or really change their quality of life based on false information. And we really, I don't know, as growing up, I always, you know, and you're young and ignorant, but it's, I always think that adults and your leaders have your best interest at heart, but that's what they don't. That leaders do not have your best interest at heart, and especially now and for quite a few years in this country, they just have their own best interest at heart. And I don't even think it matters anything except for how they can get more money, richer, and just be able to have more control over what people do.
Mm-hmm. No, I absolutely agree. And I think part of the problem with growing up, one of the things that defines growing up is where you realize that everything you've been told, or most everything you've been told, is a lie. And you only have two ways to go that, then. You fight it, like we're doing, or you knuckle under to it and you live your life, you know, of quiet desperation. You know, as I've forgotten who said that. I think it was Thoreau. And then, of course, it comes out, you know, in like a, you know, Pink Floyd song. But it's interesting that, you know, when I'm speaking of that, the artists, the creative people, the people on the edge out there that you think are so fringe, they're the ones who are actually being independent. And look at the price they pay for it. You know, Action Radio is a brand new idea. And, you know, we're paying a price that the major broadcast networks all told me before I even started WBY, it's a crazy idea, this is a stupid idea, don't bother us, you know, you're never going to get anywhere, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I thought, great, I'm onto something good. That's how I react to it. This must be great. If they all hate it, this must be really good. You know, so anyway, but you gotta, you know, almost have to have an inverse you know, look at life and have some humor. Otherwise, you go crazy. All right. So clearly on this article, the next article I found, I'm going to do the first little bit of it. And this is in a website I've never heard of before, Political Viewer, October 6th, so yesterday. It's got Bokhari. I'm not sure what that is. I guess that's a quote. This Facebook whistleblower wants more censorship, not less. See, this is what this is really about. This is about the call for more censorship. That's why the whistleblower,
right,
Frances Haugen, was put there. It says, the article says, a Facebook, and the article is written by anonymous. It's called, the name they're going by is Curious Reporter. So they don't even want to be known. Okay, at least we stand by our names here. It says, a Facebook whistleblower, Frances Haugen, is set to appear before the Senate Commerce Committee. So that was, you know, a couple of days ago. She's far from the first big tech whistleblower to expose Silicon Valley's inner workings, but she's one of the first to call for more censorship, not less. That's probably why the establishment media has embraced her with open arms. It's additionally probable why she's one of the only whistleblowers to be invited to testify to the Senate. I'm sure Democrats profoundly relish the conception of a Facebook insider telling them the company needs more regulation to stop hate verbalization and disinformation, which is what she's, you know, pellucidly, I've never heard the word, P-E-L-L-U-C-I-D-L-Y. This person knows words. Pellucidly for in recent interviews. Haugen was a component of Facebook's infamous Civic Integrity Group, the unit charged with optically canvassing over, I guess that is, interfering with the last presidential election. Haugen left because she didn't cerebrate. It went far enough. Okay. So anyway, so she's involved. She's involved in the election fraud. She's the perfect person for the job. All right. So let's get to our bill here real quickly. And this is something that needs to be shared, needs to be gotten out there. In fact, we're starting to do press releases. And so if you want to get on our press release list, you know, let me know at greg@writeyourlaws.com. And that's the email, best email to reach me. And so, and it's right on our broadcast page every day. You'll see it, greg@writeyourlaws.com. So what we've done, and I'm going to skip the introduction, skip all the stuff. Let me read you the essential part of Section 230 that allows for censorship. It starts here. Title 47, Section 230 of the U.S. Code, and under Section C, Protection for Good Samaritan Blocking and Screening of Offensive Material. This is right from the U.S. Code. C1, Treatment of Publisher or Speaker. No provider or user of an interactive computer service, that's what social media and search engines are, interactive computer services, shall be treated as a publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider. So in other words, you if they're not the publisher, in other words, Facebook is not the publisher of the content that you put on. You are, okay? So you're responsible for your content, they're not. And because of that, Section C. 2, civil liability. No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be held liable on account of A, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of, in other words, that's where they censor you, all those ways, shadow bans, restrictions, cancellations, suspensions, yada, yada, yada. And they call it good faith through restrict access or to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable. And the key words are, or otherwise objectionable, because that can mean anything, right? Whether or not such material is constitutionally protected, or B, any action taken to enable or make available to information content providers or others the technical means to restrict access. Yeah. So what they're basically saying is they have given in Section 230 the ability of the providers of interactive computer services, Facebook, Google, Twitter, Instagram, all those folks, they have the ability through good faith to restrict access or availability of material that you provide if they find it objectionable. That's insane. That's anti-First Amendment. That's incredible power. So they're legally allowed to censor you by this provision. Okay. Now, Congress wants to regulate. They want to have the Facebook wants more censorship. That's what Frances Haugen's doing there. You know, they want to break up Facebook. They've got antitrust, all this other crap. You don't have to do any of that. You don't have to do any of that. And the reason you don't have to do any of that is because everything that they have been given the power to do, you know, that long list, lewd, lascivious, otherwise objectionable stuff, is already covered by the obscenity laws. It's already covered by the pornography laws. It's illegal by the child pornography laws. So anything that's excessively violent, pornographic, or blatantly illegal like child porn is already illegal. It doesn't have to be illegal twice. You don't have to give any power to social media or search engines to touch what you post or you look up at all. It's already covered. And guess who the only place is that you're going to find that comment? right here at Action Radio. This is what we do, folks. We are the originators of ideas. You know, Matt Gaetz calls us the Ideas Factory. I should probably start publishing that as what we do. It's what we do. So I come along and take a look at this. And I'm looking at – actually, this is the second version of the bill. I've already gone through, you know, a version. There was the first one was way too complicated. So I like simplicity. In fact, the simpler the bill, the better. Okay. So proposed amendments. Section 230, C1, treatment of publisher or speaker. We keep that title. We keep that that section. But with the title of Section C would be amended. And what we do is we basically get rid of all that good Samaritan, good faith power to do anything. So Section C now reads, protection for users from providers and civil liability protection for providers of interactive computer services. And so it says the language of Section 230C2, civil liability, would delete parts A and B, those two parts I read you earlier. I know you're having trouble following this, but if you go to our website, writeyourlaws.com, and look up our Section 230 amendments, it's very easy to follow this. Okay. So here's what it does. So instead of giving them good faith power to regulate anything they want, and silence you, censor you, things like that, under the law, they're actually legally allowed to do that right now. That's the problem. My amendment is very simple. Part A, no provider of interactive computer services shall be liable for any action, interaction, anything post, or any content from or by any user of interactive computer services. So here's where it is. They still have their liability. You can't touch them. They're not a publisher. You can say whatever you say is your responsibility. They are not connected to you in any way. There is a wall of separation between you. Okay, they are not publishers. They're not responsible. They don't have to approve or disapprove. They don't have any contact infringement, you know, touching in any way of what you do because they're immune from it. That's the first part. Here's the second part. B, any infringement, interaction, or interference, no matter how minuscule, with the actions, interactions, postings, or content of any user of interactive computer services, that's you folks, by any provider of interactive computer services, that's them, shall void and revoke civil liability protection from that provider. So it's very simple. So you take out the means by which they can have any contact or have any effect or do anything with obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable stuff. Why? Because they don't have to. It's in the obscenity laws and the pornography laws. They aren't the police. The police are the police. So let's let the Department of Justice and the police and the state police do their job. That's law enforcement enforces those laws. They don't need social media to be police. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I remove their police powers, but still keep liability. But that's conditional liability. The liability that they have to have no liability for what you do on social media is there. So you can't sue them, or no one can sue them for what they let on because they're not responsible. They're not liable. They're not the publisher. Okay, but if they do have any action, if they do revert back, if they do censor, shadow ban, restrict, suspend, slow down, you know, hide, if they do anything to you in any way, however minuscule, they lose that liability protection and they can have their asses sued. Okay. So it's very simple. You remove their power to have anything to do with anything on the net. You protect them by saying they're not liable for what anybody else does. But if they do do something to what anybody else does, they lose their liability. That's the answer. That's it. That's the whole thing. It's that simple. And the staggering thing about legislation that I'm finding out as I'm writing more and more of it is how deceptively simple it is. That's it. You change two sections of a part of a section of the U.S. code. Everything changes. Big tech censorship stops because their asses can get sued off completely if they do anything. I didn't even say that. It's like a weird expression. Anyway, they can be completely sued for billions. I mean, who knows? I don't know. If they touch in any way what you put on there. And they don't have to because what you put on there is still governed by obscenity and pornography laws. Gene, how's my logic? That's such a loaded question. He said knowing the answer.
Yeah.
But if you have comments or questions or if you think I've missed something, I mean, feel free. I'm not just, you know, doing this for my own exercise here. But yeah, yeah. What do you think? Is that pretty simple? Mm-hmm. Is there anything that I can explain like better or, you know, is there anything we're missing that you can think of?
No, it sounds pretty accurate.
So why isn't the country embracing this? I mean, obviously, most people don't know yet, but they will. But I sent this out to many members of Congress, many media outlets, many, you know, political pundit authoritative folks in this country. No one's talking about it except us. Is it because it's so simple? Is it because there's no money in it? You know, unless you're a lawyer who representing somebody who's been touched by big tech. You know, I mean, I don't know. Maybe maybe it's because it's not a special interest. It actually protects everybody. It protects the providers of internet computer services or interactive computer services, in other words, social media and search engines. And it protects the users from the providers. And it protects the providers from the users. So everybody's responsible for what they're responsible for. Nobody's responsible for stuff they're not supposed to be responsible for. The users are responsible for their content to the various laws. And the providers are responsible to not touch what the users are doing. They're just providing the service. I don't know. I don't think it gets easier than that. Call me crazy, but that's what I think. All right, we're expecting Jonathan to drop in here any minute now, too, because I want to talk about other things. But this is actually working out kind of well. We are actually covering a whole bunch of ground. So let me play you a couple more things, and we'll see if we can hear from Jonathan here pretty quickly. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. It probably started with an episode of Perry Mason many years ago, that yearning to understand the law so that you can help people who don't understand the law. The arguments, the debates, the mental trial beyond the actual trial, all the while trying to do the best you can for your client. He walks the halls of justice, pictures on the wall of great minds who advance the law. He walks not in the black robes of the judge, but the suit and tie of the attorney. Known as counselor, lawyer, or any number of other names, and after years of hard work, these are the people accepted to the bar and allowed to practice law, especially at trial. For it is at trial, many times, that the great decisions of our society are realized. It's where the laws get tested. It's where juries have lost their power to judge the laws and not just the facts. It's where judges make up their own law, especially through interpretations. But if you are ever in trouble, your attorney can be your best friend. We are privileged at Action Radio to have one of those practitioners of the law, someone who knows the Constitution, who knows about due process, who takes the rights of the individual as sacred and will fight for them with all he's got. It is at this time every week that we immerse ourselves in the law. So join us in the law as we go to the Action Radio Legal Report with Jonathan Mosley. So talk about a crazy 24 hours. Oh. Jonathan, we've been all over the place. It's been, this should be an incredible show. We're having a little technical challenge reaching John. So we're going to have to work on that. Gene's working on that right now.
John Cullen?
But John Cullen, yeah, okay. Yeah. And so Judy's going to join us. Judy Mikovits is going to join us. As well, but if worst comes to worst, we'll talk to Judy, and then we'll work on our, because John was such a last minute thing that if we can, we might have to reschedule him for next week or something. We'll find out. But if Gene, this is why I love having Gene as a producer. She can work out these things with him ahead of time. Then he should be okay. He's not scheduled for another 40 minutes, so we've got time to work this out. But if something happens, that's our problem today, is last minute technical stuff of trying to get these things all working. Okay, so let's get to you, and we have a multitude of stories to talk about in the meantime. Before we get to before this, we already covered Facebook, the fake whistleblower. You know, I just went over our Section 230 bill and how simple it is separate the I don't know if you heard any of that, but separate the providers from the users. You know, much like and the best example is that. The governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, when he talked about, it's like the phone lines, you know, AT&T ready to do the phone, but they didn't police what you said on it. In the same way here, you know, social media search engines, they rent you the equipment with your personal information so they can sell it, but they can't touch what you do with it or say on it. And that's what we're trying to get to. Same kind of thing. So if you have a comment on that, feel free. Otherwise,
Excellent.
We have a multitude of other things to talk about.
Well, we've got, you know, a lot going on here. It's often the, you know, like I said, I often feel like a dog chasing a whole flock of sheep just to figure out which.
Oh, where'd you go?
Hold on.
You muted Jonathan. Jonathan, you got muted for a second.
You there?
Wrong button. it's a crazy morning. Yeah. So if you could just recap a second there, we're still working on getting John Cullen here.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can now. Yeah, you're back on the air.
It said, the system said muted there for a minute. I don't know why.
Yeah,
anyway,
hit the wrong button.
So the thing is we've got, of course, the biggest... The biggest controversy is going around. Well, first of all, I tried to call you earlier to talk about how, you know, we're kind of in an emergency situation. There is, for people who used to know things about like World War II and stuff, there was not even World War II, the Cold War. There was a time when there was the Czech Spring, and they broke away from they declared their independence and broke away from this Soviet control. And for a while, they enjoyed freedom from the Soviet Union. And then the tanks, the Soviet tanks rolled back in when they finally couldn't bring it under control without naked use of force. And this broadcast of Prime Minister from Prague, and the broadcast appealing for help from Western Europe are chilling, and of course the help never came. But I just feel like I just feel like if we were on the edge of slipping into tyranny, what would it look like, and would it look any different? And of course the FBI, you know, we've talked about, and I could talk about what's going on. Well, it's a huge topic about the January 6th movement, where basically it mostly peaceful exercise of free speech, a few horrendous exceptions, is being so massively overreacted against to make sure that nobody dreams of, you know, speaking out against the government again. And now it's happening with parents who are involved in going up to the school boards. And I think everybody's seeing this is just naked authoritarianism. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about that, in the sense that I sent you last night Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, which is which is the part that says we're is what powers Congress has. And I don't see anything in there about school boards.
Nope.
The FBI is not in the Constitution. It's created by, of course, I hope everybody understands that the Attorney General Merrick Garland, who was nominated for the Supreme Court, so somebody under Obama, somebody who should be fairly moderate, neutral, that sort of thing. He's now the Attorney General, and he sent a memorandum ordering the FBI to set up a hotline and investigate acts of violence or intimidation against school boards. And of course, we know that such as what happened with January 6th, that they play with words so that if anybody just feels bad, they say they were intimidated. If you just disagree with the liberal line, then you're threatening and intimidating the school board. So anyway, the point is that there is no authority up to the FBI or the Department of Justice to get involved in local state issues. And it's really what frightens me the most is that this is so nakedly stupid. The Democrats have won at the margins with the suburban vote, particularly suburban women. And here they're just blowing up their chances. I mean, because it's mothers who are like, don't you dare touch our children. And they're just so nakedly destroying their appeal with the suburban women. And yet somehow they don't care. You know, the fact that they're doing something is they're either so desperate to hold on to power that they're willing, you know, they can't pretend anymore.
Yeah.
So it's important to start out with the idea that there is no authority, as people are saying, for the federal government to deal with local officials, which are school boards. They're, you know, locally elected. And yet they're doing that. There are states, you know, states have police. They have state police often, mm-hmm. or local police. They don't need the FBI to stick its nose in. And normally when crime is regulated nationwide, there's, you know, there's a fig leaf of interstate commerce. And because they do, the Congress has the power to regulate interstate commerce.
And well, that's used for everything.
They
say anything's interstate commerce. I'm sure they say education's interstate commerce, so they can regulate that.
Well, that's why they, that's the hook they have to use. But in fact, there's nothing remotely said about in a particular city, a parent going up and talking to a school board. So, you know, the FBI says that it's against the law to intimidate federal, you know, government officials. Yeah, but it's not your jurisdiction. You know, the FBI does not have jurisdiction over that question.
Right.
You know, the local, now, you know, obviously, I think we've talked before about how the Tea Party and then the MAGA movement have happily brought millions of people into the political system. And that's, you know, the only hope we have left of saving our country from tyranny and all kinds of craziness. But it means we have millions of people who really are not very trained or sophisticated or nuanced about this. And so obviously, you know, you don't cross the line, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't use it. I mean, I have to temper my language sometimes. I know it's hard, but when people are frustrated, don't say things that can sound like, you know, you're going to burn their house down or kill them or kill their dog.
Right.
You know, there are certain things you just don't do. So it's our fault at times. It's the other thing, too. It's like Ron Wilcox, the Northern Virginia Tea Party, has said if you go somewhere to a protest or something, if one person says something intemperate, that's what the media will cover. And it's the same thing with the system trying to hide from the public. If one person goes over the line, it will say that everybody is at that stage. You know, so you have to not, you know, threaten, you know, give death threats or things like that. It does not help. It does not do anything but help the other side. But anyway, so if that happened, it would be a matter for local police. And it's clear that they're using things, like, for example, with the January 6th case that I have here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to talk about because, well, it'd be a huge topic. There's so much going on. But they lie. Okay, let's just be clear. The prosecutors, the U.S. Attorney's Office, the District of Columbia, sorry, but they lie. And they portrayed my client and kept these probably defendants in jail by saying that they're the James Bond, they're the James Bond supervillains, and everybody, you know, so they're responsible for everything that happened. Like they just went there, walked around, they poked a head in the Capitol, and they went home. But they're responsible for everything that anybody else did because they are falsely labeling them as the, you know, as the leaders, and they're not.
Yeah.
So, you know, this is so what's going to happen with the with this intimidation of parents is that they will lie. It'll say that somebody threatened violence, and that sort of thing, and it's not true. So we know that this is extremely scary. And very illegal. So, good thing is it's getting a great deal of attention. So that's some hope, and it also is some hope that the Democrats have doomed themselves with the swing population that they've depended upon, which is usually suburban women. It's been. And they're losing their position with minorities.
That's why 100,000 illegal Afghan go-getters and their 5-year-old wives are here. That's why a million people are crossing the border illegally. They figure if they can't get the vote, they're going to replace it. And if they can't replace it, they're going to cheat. And this is all about power. You know, January 6th is fascinating. We talked about that earlier. Gina and I talked about that. You know, in the fact that Biden still hasn't gone through the January 6th process. They still haven't done the state count. I mean, they basically voted not to do it, but you can't because it's constitutional. They have to count the votes from the states, and they didn't do it. They just approved it all. You know, like they approved an impeachment by voice vote.
I haven't looked into that exactly, but the thing is that they, for example, I've also helped Zachary Leal with his with the federal lawsuit, the congressman sued everybody, but they didn't sue one of my clients, unfortunately, because I'd like to hit them back. And they had they sued some police officers who were injured, and have sued everybody, and it's basically a left wing organization, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, it's just using these poor officers as pawns. And they're saying that everything is racist because the cities that have the greatest history of voter fraud happen to be black or minority.
Yeah.
Now, Rudy Giuliani didn't say anything about their race, and they didn't do anything because of their race, but they just happened to be majority black. And I responded in that lawsuit saying that, wait a minute, the problem is that the voters' votes were stolen. So if you're going to say, well, in these places where there's, like you were saying, where there's massive voter fraud, happen to be black, those voters are the victims. You know, probably liberal white boys from their mama's basement in Long Island, New York,
right,
came out and stole their vote. It has nothing to do with the race of the voters, because they're the ones who didn't vote. Somebody else voted for them. So it's just outrageous. So I'm fighting in that too. And
okay.
There's that problem. But because this is the greatest threat. Because the thing is that if it isn't obvious what I said already, if they're willing to risk the mama bears fighting for their children, I fear that there's nothing they won't stop at, and very soon. Does that make any sense? I think the left will. I think that, I have never really wanted to buy a gun as much as if they're willing to risk this, they're willing to do anything.
This is a crazy situation. I mean, especially the whole January 6th thing is to me, it's a big propaganda operation. They're political prisoners. They're trying to erase the memory of Trump, erase the memory of everything. They're trying to, force this mandatory story upon us. This is why I played the Sedition Act earlier, from my my piece on my Santa Rosa Volunteers piece, that this is all part of the operation. The Facebook person that was there Tuesday was part of the operation. I have a whole file called the operation, and this is all these things that are combining together to control, to make us, you know, it's basically a tyranny without calling it that. You know, and everything's been misnamed. Everything's crazy. I was noticing they were talking about Afghanistan. You know, no one talks about it being the Biden surrender, which is what it is. It's the Biden withdrawal. Okay. You look at the language. They're insurrectionists, you know, not political prisoners. You know, and this goes through all the stuff that's going on. And so the misinformation is unbelievable. And it's the, you know, I guess we never thought that the access to the information would bring about the control of information in ways that we've never thought possible. See, before you could go read a book, you could go find things, you could go look stuff up, you could do, and nobody knew what you're doing. Now everybody knows what you're doing. You know, we have far more access to information than we ever had before, but we also have far more restrictions on it and far more consequences for looking it up. This is a weird world we're in.
Well, it used to be a huge debate on the left, a huge protest, that what book somebody checked out from the library should be confidential. And, you know, someone was Satan if they wanted to know what, you know, who, like a Senate nominee or, you know, Supreme Court nominee or something like that, what books they checked out. That was considered unacceptable. Now, mm-hmm. you know, the left is George Orwell, is Big Brother. So, so it's very, very frightening. But anyway, so let's see, other legal things that you wanted to talk about. But,
well, there's a bunch. Well, let's talk about Facebook and censorship in general. What do you think? What's your take on what happened with this orchestrated effort to put this fake whistleblower, who's an algorithm product manager, director, you know, manage the election information for Facebook? I mean, she's right up there with all the big election frauders. You know, comes off on 60 Minutes of as this, you know, niceness and sweetness. You know, and then she's calling for more censorship, and the Democrats are like, "You're right. We need more censorship." But they're not saying that. They're calling it regulation. Well, we better regulate this information because they're destroying young girls' self-images. You know, I'm sure they are, but that's not the point. The point is what they're really after is the control. And so it's
right. And this is where,
you know,
This is where some people might call me, you know, open to conspiracy theory, what they call conspiracy theories, meaning wait 6 months and it turns out to be the truth. But I've always had some restraint, and this is what scares me, because the pattern here of crisis solution is more government. We love you so much we have to take your rights away for your protection. It's just too familiar. You know, it's the same pattern over and over again. That there's a crisis, and what we have to do about it is take away your freedoms. And it's true, you know, because I have a lawsuit against Facebook for Jerome Bell. Twitter just banned him. He's a congressional candidate. You know, he's not just some, you know, they're interfering with an election. And so that's what I think about is that it's interesting because Facebook has been running these ads nonstop in certain places about how it's been 25 years of the internet. Mm-hmm. And regulations haven't been updated since then.
Yeah.
Now we want to regulate them. Why would they be calling for more regulation? Because they're going to use their army of lobbyists to make it in their favor. And so that's what I think is that. Of course, you know, the issue about. I mean, the whole. It's a mixed bag because the whistleblower was that. First of all, she worked in the election integrity unit. If people don't know, she and, you know, a large number of people like that. If there was no voter fraud, electoral fraud, or machines or anything like that, the 2020 election was stolen by her.
Mm-hmm.
By, you know, speaking loosely, you know, hundreds of hers, and. I mean, the cover up of the Hunter laptop, the cover up of other stories, that alone stole the election. So she comes out of that, and she wants to, and she says that Instagram, you know, Hertz, which is owned by Facebook, Hertz little girls' body images or something like that, which, you know, I don't know, but that seems really fuzzy to me. It's like, you know, that's like, how the heck do you measure that? And I don't know about that.
Well,
this is a big crisis that we have to...
It's a crisis du jour. You know, it was we have to go to war in Iraq because they're throwing babies out of their incubators. Remember that line? You know, there's weapons of mass destruction. You know, it doesn't matter what they find the line. The line now is, you know, young girls are being victimized. They're getting anorexia because of, you know, self-image, self-identity crisis because of Facebook. And who's saying that? Someone from Facebook. Who's saying that? The person that creates the algorithms for Facebook. The person that has the most control over this in Facebook is the one who's complaining about it, and yet they didn't do anything about it in Facebook. I mean, this makes no sense. And we still haven't talked about the blackout. You know, so that there's,
right.
there's another aspect of it. Yeah.
The blackout, I'm going to say it. You know, I have no proof for it whatsoever, but my feeling is that the blackout was to scrub their pages.
Oh.
You know, with this... They shut it down.
That's
so they could go back and scrub their pages with the scandal coming up.
Hold on a second. No, this is interesting. Okay, so I want to kind of investigate this a little bit because my theory was they call it a faulty configuration. Faulty reconfiguration. Okay, so we looked all
yeah,
that
name,
up. I explored
you know,
that. I went through the Chris Krebs of the cybersecurity government institution that he used to head up. You know, when he said it's the most secure election in history, and I connected Chris Krebs to Alex Stamos, who used to be a Facebook security expert. They're now working together in a company. Facebook rigged the election partly by all the money they put in and the mail drop-offs and the influence.
Oh, that's true.
And everything else. So these people are all connected. Okay. So this is part of the election fraud. So my question, you know, when it comes to the blackout, you know, is why are all these people, you know, check out, I think it was Monday's show. No, it's Tuesday's show because it happened on Monday. You know, and we talked about this and said, wait a minute, you know, why are all these people connected? What did they do? And what Gina and I were talking about was a reset. You know, whenever you do a bunch of stuff to your computer with new programs, new software, upgrades, things like that, they want you to restart your computer. Okay. Well, if your computer system is Facebook, you know, and you're trying to do a bunch of stuff and you have to restart it, you got to shut it down. So what better way
to get rid of all the patches to rig the election.
But why would you need to shut their network down to do that?
But they might if they wanted to delete things and make sure nobody caught them, so saw them being disappeared, just deleted. I don't know. You know, like I said, I have no evidence of this whatsoever, except I don't believe, because you know, what happens is you type in a name that's quasi-English, and it goes to look up a table and converts that into a number, IP address. And so there's this translation conversion process. And I think what they're saying is that table got misconfigured. So when you typed in Facebook, it didn't know where to go. I don't believe that would take them more than 4 minutes to fix. So it would take, you know, for my dinky little websites, it would take me
But they've got a whole network. They've got a worldwide network with billions of people on it. You know, and what data would they have? You know, so in other words, you think they're worried enough now because of the Arizona audit, or whatever reason you think that they want to do this now, and they arranged to have this whistleblower come on. You know, is the whistleblower covering up the blackout? Were they doing the whistleblower anyway? Are these events connected or not? You know, I mean, these are things we don't know. And whatever they did at Facebook and all these other sites, they had to shut down the entire network to do it. And they did it during prime time in the United States. They didn't do it in the morning, our time.
When the whistleblower is calling for action, which is exactly what Facebook has been saying they want for while now. It's a fuzzy, it's a funny whistleblower, you know, who's asked the, solution proposed is to stomp out the conservative voices. Usually a whistleblower is somebody who wants something that management doesn't want. Here they do want to regulate it across the board. But remember, this is, part of the theory about big companies influencing or even bribing sometimes the government is that the government regulates all the entire industry across the board. The big companies enjoy immunity from new competitors.
Right.
So on the surface, they're somewhat – she would take power away from Facebook and give it to some entity. But that would then, freeze out anybody else. It would freeze out – because if you're Mark Zuckerberg right now, it just occurs to me, what's happening in the social media space right now?
Right.
You have a dozen competitors springing up, and their characteristic is freedom. So the whistleblower, what does a whistleblower want to do? Take away the freedom, make everybody subject to government. And anyway, who knows? But what else do we? There's so many things going on. We didn't get a while ago to the Gainesville, Florida lawsuit just down the street from you, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I mean, Florida is gigantic, obviously.
Yeah.
They sued the city of Gainesville against a mandate, which, by the way, is against the state issues anyway, to be vaxxed. And I read the opinion. It was weird because the city of Gainesville didn't answer. While there are serious issues because the governor had already outlawed, the governor and legislature had already outlawed the vax mandate. It seems like the city of Gainesville, their lawyers just by default. They just sort of stood by and said, okay, you take it. So the judge gave them a preliminary injunction against the vax mandate because the city of Gainesville just didn't do anything about it. That's called collusion, in a lawsuit. It's not proper.
What was the lawsuit again? Just so everybody's clear on what the exact lawsuit was. I mean, that would help.
Well, I'll have to pull that up again.
If it's a big deal, don't worry about it. Yeah.
I think it's about city employees, but I will say while I'm checking that for example, the homosexual marriage, that is how it flew through so fast is because in Virginia, our attorney general who's up for re-election again, just refused to defend the existing law. So marriage was between a man and a woman. Somebody
right.
sued, and our attorney general disagreed with him. He did not, his duty, and sometimes they do this when they don't like it, they have to defend the law, even if they don't like it. He didn't. And, that's one of the big issues that we have there is that they basically contrived where both sides of the lawsuit are on the same side, and that's what happened. I think that's what happened there in Florida. Although it was a good thing there. There's just a little bit of news going on there that they contrived with both sides to end the vaccine mandate, and that's going back and forth all across the country.
Well, here's something too. We talked about this a little bit off the air, but the vaccine mandate, they never seem to challenge this on the merits that it doesn't damn well work. you know, they're having massive problems. They're getting all kinds of COVID in kids, and kids, you know, before the vaccine, the messenger RNA shot, were fine. You know, it was almost always older folks with comorbidities. I mean, the greatest population that died from COVID were in the nursing homes. And these are people who are, you know, in a condition where they need constant care anyway. And so they've already got, you know, some serious complications or comorbidities on their way. And so, you know, something at that point in life, something's going to get you anyway, and something, or maybe a whole combination of something.
Right.
And that the idea that kids are all of a sudden dying or getting the swollen hearts or all these things that they're getting, you know, coming out of nowhere makes no sense to me, unless it's coming from the vaccine, because that's one thing everybody seems to have in common.
But that's wrong think. Now, some of our audience, being America being what it is, may have seen the movie about 1984. Some may have actually read the book, but I hope people, you know, and again, we have a common vocabulary that our schools are trying to deal with, that, you know, trying to eradicate. And wrongthink is what you're not allowed to say or even think under the Big Brother totalitarianism. And remember, George Orwell wrote his books because he saw real movements going this way. And it's been very true. I've said it before that, and other people are saying it, that the left read 1984 as a how-to manual rather than as a warning.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other thing that's interesting, you know, I spent 5 years in the U.S. Department of Education as a career civil servant, although I thought back in the 80s and early 90s I could make a difference. I found out that I was alone. Nobody else really cared. But notice when you see their strategy or their power structure, what do they react most ferociously about? The schools. The left wants the ability to indoctrinate our children. That's critical to their long-term success. And they've largely succeeded on a spectacular level.
Yeah.
But any attempt to try to take back the schools for the parents, look how they're reacting. Is that they have to have, they will not allow anyone to stop the indoctrination of our children.
Well, see, we talked about this yesterday too. We had a great discussion on removing. In fact, most of yesterday's program was about, you know, the second great opportunity to remove the government schools from our country and go to a fully privatized system. The first great time was when they all shut down, you know, back in the spring of 2020. And I screamed and yelled for weeks. I said, shut down the schools. They're already shut down. Sell their buildings. Fire the teachers. That's going to destroy the union. Set up private schools. Sell those school buildings to private educational entrepreneurs. Start a privatized system. Take all the education taxes away from government and give it to parents in the form of a voucher. And we have a private system. We could have done it in 2 or 3 months. Easily.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do it. Nobody wanted to do it. You know, I have friends of mine saying, you're crazy, Greg. You're an idiot. You can't get rid of the public schools. I said, think of the advantages. Think of all the things we won't have to deal with anymore. And nobody picked me up on it. And then now, because I have friends later saying, oh, gee, I guess you were right. I said, okay, great. Now we've got the second great opportunity to get rid of these schools. Right now, you've got Merrick Garland, the Praetorian Guard General, Attorney General of Biden's secret police force and oppressive unit. You know, and we went over how the Praetorian Guard was the Romans used to use as an enforcement arm and as a secret police. So you got, you know, Merrick Garland, God help us, he didn't get on the Supreme Court. You know, this guy would have been horrible. So one of the few things McConnell did right was keep him off the court. So he gets out and says, we're going to, you know, and Jen Psaki, the minister of propaganda, you know, the Joseph Goebbels of the Biden insurrection, you know, talks about how we're going to have connections with local law enforcement. And we've already gone over how you can't do that. You know, this is education, first of all, isn't mentioned in the Constitution. They're constitutionally prevented from doing anything in education. You know, and the Justice Department has no business, you know, first of all, the FBI doesn't have a constitutional authority to exist. We have no national police force provision. Founders would never allow that, you know, and the states wouldn't ratify it. But there it is. They created it on their own, you know, and the states have basically given up their ability to regulate the federal government a long time ago. They consider it now a national rather than a federal government. So it used to be a federal government of separate powers. Now it's a national government of all powers. That's insane. And so the idea that these people can regulate parents and that they want to stop free speech, this is basically a totalitarian free speech clampdown. Schools, art, indoctrination centers, don't question it. Who the hell do you think you are? They're not your kids anyway. They're our kids. I mean, this is the attitude. And you know,
and of course,
people,
this is famous.
Well, we talked yesterday about, you know, fight or escape, okay? It's like fight or flight, all right? And so, I left California. I escaped because there's no way I could change California myself. I'm going to waste my life sitting around in a futile situation, you know, where I'm going to have no hope of doing anything. I couldn't set up Action Radio in California. I would never prayer. I would never get anywhere. So I came to Florida, where fortunately I got a job, you know, in the Panhandle. So here I am, you know, in Milton near Pensacola. Okay. So you got to go where you have enough like people, like minds to do something. Now we're going to take Santa Rosa County here and make it the freest county in the country. We're going to lead by example. We're going to get, but I've been running into resistance, you know, at the county commission. They're not, you know, screaming and yelling for our illegal alien free zone bill, which means they don't want to be an illegal alien free zone. And I got to find out why. Okay. So all these things are going on. So idea that they could, let me just get last little point here. This idea that the federal government can regulate the speech of parents at school board meetings is as totalitarian as it gets. But if you look at the Communist Manifesto,
yes,
what's one of the most important planks of the Communist Manifesto is control of the schools, control of the kids. That's where the propaganda begins. That's where education is designed not to turn out educated people, but to turn out socialists. We spent an hour on the show yesterday going over Phillips Exeter Academy, okay, the preeminent prep school in the country that trains the leaders. This is where the elites send their kids to school. There were no masks. There were no mandates. There were no quarantines. There were no rules, regulations. It was just an academic setting where you could be all that you could be, the old Army slogan, and you could go on with a life of purpose to lead the world. They train the world's leaders and educate, and the government system trains the cogs in the wheel. And that's what it came down to. And so the idea that you don't see anybody at Phillips Exeter Academy, you know, if the parents complain there, that doesn't get the attention of the Justice Department. You know, of course not, because those parents know their kids are going to turn out to be the next round of leaders, the ambassadors, the generals, the governors, the president, you know, all the big, the CEOs of major companies all come out of these prep schools. The 1%, literally, and 1% of kids in the country go to prep schools. What a surprise. And I think I know where they got it from. But we spent a lot going over what the elite are and what they, you know, who the elite are and what they do. And so that's where we stand, you know, and this is why I say it's so dangerous that they want to do this. Now, that story's gone off, too, because now we're concerned with the Facebook whistleblower. So we've lost the story on the Facebook blackout. We've lost the story on Praetorian Guard Attorney General Merrick Garland. Who knows what they're going to throw at us today. I mean, the problem with my show is not finding out what to talk about. It's finding out what not to talk about. They don't have time.
Well, the thing is, of course, the Soviet Union, you know, I work for John Kwopis at a Heritage Foundation spinoff. And the Soviet Union, this is a characteristic of the Soviet Union, was that that the children don't belong to the parents. I mean, that was one of the techniques and complaints about, you know, the outrages about the Soviet Union was the way they separated children from almost from birth. They had, you know, pre-K so that the allegiance was to the party, not to their parents. And they're doing it. But the history of the decline, the decline and fall of the United States is that good people have always been many steps behind the left because we think, oh, it can't be that bad. And that's sort of my nature. You know, I'm not that radical as compared to some people. I could find people who disagree, but I'm not that quick to, you know, I agree that it's better to ascribe something to stupidity or mistake than to an evil plan. And we've woken up too late to the fact that, no, it's an evil plan. The left is at war with America, and I've heard great presentations back when I was part of this politically active conservative church about how the socialists from the 1930s were open about it. Mm-hmm. They said that we could not get socialism here in America. They're too independent unless we dumb down the schools. I remember that, like, why would anybody say that openly? Because back then, socialism was cool. It was the new thing on the block. It was wonderful. The Soviet Union was a great new innovation among the academia and the intelligentsia. So it didn't have the stigma that it once had. It was losing. So they, you know, they talked in their plans about how they were going to do this. They had to destroy American institutions and destroy the, the church and school and this, that, or the American people would never accept, really communism. Of course, it's always been a confusion whether we're talking about socialism or Marxism or communism. Marx and what, you know, Marxism was called socialism by Marx.
Why do you write the Communist Manifesto then? If Marx talked about socialism, it's interesting because these words seem interchangeable. They're always talking about the difference between socialism and communism, but Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto.
Right, and to them, they were interchangeable. We've tried to, the thing is that this, you know, the left is at war with the American people. And that sounds incredibly off the charts, but you have to eventually be dragged kicking and screaming to the reality that, it's true. They have always been, but they've been in a guerrilla war covertly, and now they've broken out into open tank battles, on the plane. And it sounds inflammatory. It sounds off the charts. It sounds crazy, but the amazing thing is it's true.
Yeah.
They're trying to shut down the
I'm sorry, no, finish your point. I thought you were finished. My mistake.
No, I'm just saying, when they're going after parents, and these are not political, I mean, they may be dumb people in many areas of life, but they're not dumb when it comes to politics.
Yeah.
They know that they either have to be desperate or think they can get away with anything to go after parents.
Yeah, I think that's the situation. Hey, listen, I've got Judy Mikovits, Dr. Mikovits on the line right now, and I didn't have a chance to really text. We've been going back and forth while we've been talking here, trying to get John Cullen, but we're having trouble connecting with him, and it's a Direct Connect Skype. Both issues are causing us all kinds of problems. I'm going to try and reschedule him. Judy, if you have a few minutes to talk to us now and give us some what you know about the whole Spanish flu thing, that would be wonderful. But if you want to wait until we can get both you and John Cullen, I can do that as well. And we're on the air right now. We're live, but I don't have any other way to talk to you than directly right now. So I want to give you the option. If you got a few minutes, I'd love to hear what you know. But if you want to come back with John, or you can do that too. You can come back with John as well once we figure out. We've got Skype and Direct Connect issues right now. Dr. Michael,
Greg, I'm sure we can find something Judy can talk to us about.
Well, I know that. Yeah, but I mean, she's here right now. I mean, I'm not going to waste the opportunity, but I'm just saying I want to give you the option because, anybody that comes on my show, first of all, you've got my respect, and so I want to make sure that we honor that with you, Dr. Michael. You got a few minutes to talk to us, or would you like to come back another time,
sure.
Or both? Okay, all right.
Sure,
well, let's go.
A little bit of both.
Okay, let's do both. We'll worry about the rest. And I'd like to actually, this all happened last minute. This all started last night. And what I'd love to do is get you, Dr. Zelenko, and John Cullen together on a show. So I'm going to see if I can work on that because
be a week-long conversation. So.
Well, we'll do several of them at a time. I got 30 years of action radio I want to do. And so I'm being healthy and losing weight, and I want to be around for a long time to do this. This is my new career. We got time. So, all right, so Dr. Michael, let me get you caught up real quickly of the last 24 hours. I heard from – Jonathan told me about the citizens grand jury that Larry Klayman's involved with. This one in Philadelphia. I forgot. I think it was July 4th, and I couldn't be there for that. But this bombshell got dropped by this man, John Cullen, who I still don't know his story yet, but we're going to find out more about him, that the Spanish flu – has been reconstructed, has been resurrected. They actually went to World War I soldiers and dug them up and took their lung tissue. You know, this is like something out of Jurassic Park. You know, well, we took frog DNA and put it in the dinosaurs. You know, I mean, this is what it sounds like to me. This is, and the question, perennial question comes to mind from Jeff Goldblum's great line. You know, you only asked if you could, you didn't ask if you should. You know, in other words, just because you have the technology, does that mean you have to do it? And so I'm just going to let you go. Just if tell the story. I mean, I got a lot of it last night from this, the elephant in the room question with John Cullen was there. There's another gentleman and Larry Klayman were talking about this. And so I've got all this stuff in my head right now that's blowing me away. Can you sort this out and tell us how we got here? What is the Spanish flu all about?
Well, sure.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, sure. What I learned, most of what I learned from a book by John M. Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, called The Great Influenza. And when you read about it, you see that it was connected, you know, to a vaccination program, to close quarters in the military, spreading vaccine, you know, literally vaccine contaminants around. And then, of course, we all know they put them in masks. So everybody...
Wait. They put vaccine in masks? What did you say?
No, they put people. They put people in the masks during the Spanish flu. And, so it wasn't the influenza that killed everybody. It was the bacteria contaminated vaccines and bacteria spreading around. But that year's influenza, and I met John Cullen online about September of last year, and we did a show together, I believe, with Jason Goodman, who was the same person that we did the show with the Citizens Grand Jury. Now, I think Tuesday or yesterday was the third time we've met with Larry Klayman since this year. But at any rate, what John alerted me to before he had me, we were interviewing on that show back in September of 2020. He mentioned this stuff to me. So being a scientist, he said, well, what do you know about all of this? And I said, well, essentially nothing. But we looked it up. And so I found paper, scientific paper, published papers from 2004. And this was coming from military institutes, I believe, in Maryland and Bethesda, but it's a Journal of Virology paper, and the author, the senior author on it, is a fellow named Reed, R-E-I-D, and I don't have my computer open here right now, but basically what they did is what you just said. They cloned, they went to people who had died of the Spanish flu, and they cloned out, now that your audience knows the term, that variant. So they dissected in this scientific paper what was the pathogenic part. Why was that strain so deadly combined with the other things I just said, combined with wearing a mask and of course, high stress conditions and unsanitary in World War One. So
the trenches.
This is what...
The trenches
were
horrible.
Trenches. So you're in the trenches, you're wet, and all the nurses and doctors, everyone wore a mask in the flu.
Tell me about the masks, because we know they're like petri dishes in front of your face. They grow all kinds of stuff. The parents did a town hall article, or the town hall report on this group in Florida that took the kids' masks, and they found pneumonia, you know, bacteria and germs. It was like the worst thing on the planet. It was all combined in these masks. They were growing bacteria. So is the mask part of the spreading of disease when they're trying to say it's not? What is the real purpose of the masks? Okay.
Yes, that is the purpose of the mask, is to make us sick. And in fact, when John and I talked last fall, our book, The Case Against the Masks, had just been published, and it shows, basically 10 pieces of evidence of why you don't wear a mask to stop, it does nothing but drive a virus outbreak. It doesn't stop it. It's like, as my friend Peggy Hall says, it's like a chain link fence stopping a mosquito. So all you're doing is suffocating yourself. You're breathing in your toxic CO2. When we breathe, the atmospheric oxygen is 21.9% oxygen. And we breathe in 21.9 and out 16.9. Where does that 4% go but our metabolism, to fuel, to give us energy, to work our immune systems, to keep us well? So here we all are in masks, and every one of them is contaminated from the second you put it on, except the true 47 silver masks I wear. But at any rate,
but those aren't commonly available. They're only for a few hours of surgery, right? Or a limited time.
Oh, no, the silver masks. the silver mask you can wear all the time. This is made by a company for cancer and AIDS patients for the last 5 years. So I was introduced to them because, you know, she saw my book, and so they're never contaminated. And silver and copper is quite antimicrobial, quite antibacterial. But on March 10th of this year, I got assaulted on an American Airlines for wearing a triple layer heavy duty silver mask. You know, this is the kind of, you know,
assaulted for having
the whole mask thing.
The wrong mask?
You sick.
But they had the wrong,
yeah,
you said, they said
the wrong,
wrong
mask. That's right.
Oh yeah,
that's
yours
right.
Works.
Yeah, mine works. And flight attendants, pilots, and people like that, when they wear these masks, it's like, no, you can't wear that. Well, you know, you couldn't possibly breathe because you have to make yourself sick. You know, you have to, this whole paper mask, it looks like asbestos to your immune system. It's got toxic fluoride and PFOEs and PFTEs, you know, and it was actually against Prop 65 in California.
The cancer initiative.
And so I was on a train the other day in a mask, of course, a silver mask. And they'd taken all the Prop 65 off the doors of the train. Oh, so you're breaking your own law, which I told, you know, Governor Newsom a year ago, and you're breaking your own law. So they just took all the signs down about the law. Now you don't hear of that anymore because those are the toxins. And I don't care whether it's the cotton mask, the N95 mask, or the mask. That's why we wrote the book, the case against the mask. The reason mask you should be limited is because it will spread disease. So take a mask and get a flu shot and you kill yourself and you spread the toxic. So in the flu shot are the virus they cloned in 2004. Oh, you took the deadliest virus and you put that H1N1 in the flu shot that went to the Italians in the beginning of 2019. The Italians, you know, they all died. That flu shot grown in maiden Darby kidney cells, which is a dog cell line in the laboratories. So that flu shot, it had four different strains, and one of them was the H1N1 that was cloned from the people who died of the Spanish flu. So they did create the Spanish, you know, flu. Wear the mask, get the shot, be in crowded conditions, and just, you know, spread it around the world. And it wasn't released from the lab. It was carried from the people, the nurses, the doctors, nosocomial, who were spreading this as they forced a flu shot in a crowded, you know, situation with a bunch of sick people. So they spread it around the lab in the injection. And we know last summer it was, oh, get the flu shot early. You know, so you flatten the curve. Professor Dolores Cahill proved the virus, the SARS-CoV-2 was long gone in May, had already mutated to something weaker, which is what viruses do, unless you use gain of function in the lab, then they get stronger. No, viruses that go through populations with healthy immune systems go away. That's the point of your immune system, unless you wear a mask. And unless you lock down, unless you stay in sun, inside, away from sunshine. You know, this was carefully planned, as you said just before I got on the show. So that's when John introduced me to that last September, and I put it all together. And it was, you know, and then obviously everything's continued back in California. You know, I went in the bank the other day to try to put some money in it, and she passes under the teller through the window where you usually pass money. They're all surrounded in glass. Passes an envelope and says, "No, you have to wear a mask now." Passes this envelope to you with a mask in it. You know, stupid.
Well,
and I just said, "This is
the
machine work," and I left. But I'm gonna close those bank accounts. Wait, and this is what. You know, this is what we have to do. I'm not working. I'm not going to be subject to tyranny and discrimination. I'm not going to do it. We have lung diseases. We are smart enough not to kill ourselves, despite how long Tony Fauci's been trying to have me killed. No problem. I'm not helping you. But this is what's happening now. Why are we back? Oh, that vaccinated or not? Put the mask on. Why? Because on shows like this, we talked, yeah, that's how they're going to make yourself sick and spread your variants. Sure, go ahead, inject them, and then put the mask on. That'll work really well for you, and look how many people it's killed.
Yeah, Senator Johnson had a great chart where COVID was disappearing again. I mean, I still have the CDC charts from July 2020 when we saw the hit a sharp rise starting in January up to April 15th, tax day, which is interesting, and then a sharp drop off, and the death count was headed for zero as of about July 4th. So I call July 4th, 2020, COVID Independence Day. It was done. You know, we got herd immunity started
right.
April 15th, and you had about a 45-degree decline. I still got those screenshots. You know, I can send them to you.
Right.
But the thing was, after that, the CDC started lying, and they went from deaths to cases. And all of a sudden, it was amazing. It was like a roller coaster reversal. All of a sudden, the roller coaster started streaking skyward again. I said, this is the fraud. this is all nonsense. And the lockdowns and the masks and everything else, so they perpetuated the disease. Well, the disease went away again. You know, and so they brought out the vaccines in December of 2020. And of course, shortly thereafter, Senator Johnson said, look, here's the rise in vaccines across the country, and here's the rise in cases and deaths again. And it's amazing that it follows almost a parallel line, just lagging behind the vaccine line. So he's out front of this, but you don't see that. You know, he can get it on Rumble. You don't see that on YouTube or major news, but they brought, so no matter what happens, no matter what we do to get rid of this disease in our systems, in our immunity, and I'm taking Precedin and, you know, vitamin C, vitamin D and zinc. You know, I'm not worried about COVID. I'm worried about the protein, the spike proteins being shed from the vaccinated people. I don't want them injuring me. I don't want the secondhand smoke of their vaccine. You know, and so this is weird.
I
try and come up with creative analogies. But the thing is, everything's happening in reverse. The worst, you know, Dr. Fascist, as we call him. We got some background noise there. Dr. Fascist, the genocidal psychopathic vaccine drug pusher, as I you know affectionately refer to him, you know, is going to go down as one of the most evil men in history. You know, right up there with Dr. Mengele and Genghis Khan and all these other folks for the amount of people that he can kill with a smile on his face, and take the profits and put them in his Cayman Islands account, wherever that is. I mean, he's the one that needs auditing. But everything's in reverse, and you know this too because you've talked about this. The worst possible thing you can do is put people inside, create a stressful situation, get them addicted to drugs and things because they're all stressed out. They're losing their jobs. They're losing their companies. They're losing their life savings. You know, the virus is like, hey, opportunity. You know, so it goes, and then they're all masked and they're spreading it that way. And so they're doing everything possible to enhance the virus after it's here. So let's cut to the chase, as they say. Why are they doing this? You know, why are they doing this? Let me get you to say, I want to ask this question. Why ultimately, what's really going on here? Why are they doing everything possible to infect this country with a disease that they can, that they know the cure of? I know Dr. Fascist knows that hydroxychloroquine cures COVID. I'm sure he's on it. I'm sure he created SARS-CoV-2 specifically because he knew the cure in advance. Why are they doing this?
Correct, to kill as many people as possible and inject and inoculate as many people as possible, because once you've got the spike protein, you've got the makings of the three deadliest pandemics of our lifetime, which is HIV, XMRV, and SARS, all rolled into one little monkey virus they injected. They used to inject you, because the Vero monkey kidney cells, they grow it in. It never was a human virus that spread the way you said it. So they're doing it to get as many people weakened as sick as they can, and then they can just kill you basically anytime they want. The sickest people die already. The 50 million there's who the governments have already stolen our Social Security from. It's kill us. Kill my husband at 83. Kill me at 63. You know, kill all the cancer patients who you gave cancer. Experiments at the National Cancer Institute and NIH over the last, you know, 30 or 40 years. We had that cure, too, a long time ago, you know, and look at the explosion. So the cancer patients are dying. They won't treat them without injecting them. You don't inject a cancer patient. You don't inoculate them with anything. They already have no immune system by definition.
That's how they got cancer.
And
I'll
so
say my next question.
They're spreading cancer, they're causing cancer, and they're killing people. So the big why is kill everybody you made sick and call it something else so you don't have a liability. And then once you've got everybody, the healthy people, the healthy 30-year-olds have already been heavily vaccinated with all this garbage. So all you have to do is detonate, hit the kill switch, and that's what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And if not the shot, the booster, the booster, the booster. If, you know, if not this shot, so the healthy ones that don't go down first. The booster, the booster, the booster.
Yeah. I got a little background noise on Gene's line, so I'm going to mute that for a second. Let me ask, because I know Gene has a question for you. We got another question here about the spike proteins from Bumpin' Jack, who's our live chat person. They want to know how the spike proteins actually, you know, go through your body, break off from the viral cells. I'm kind of curious about that too. So you've got the virus. I guess it's called a cell. It's got the protein wall. It's got the DNA inside it that replicates in your cells like a parasite. And you have these spike proteins on the outside that make it easier to attach to your cells. But the spike proteins break off. They are, in fact, COVID themselves, right? Or every bit as deadly as a virus cell?
Well, the spike proteins cause the disease. I wouldn't say they break off of the viral particle.
Oh, they don't. Okay.
In the vaccine, they just insert themselves right through the cell membrane. In HIV, the GP41 that I talked about on the Epoch Time show and the GP120 is the envelope, the spike protein, and what goes through the membrane of the cell in the viral membrane as well, which is your cellular membrane. That's how it buds. Except for this one's not a human virus, it's a monkey virus, so it's budding out of monkey cell membranes, and so your immune system is going to attack that as well. So when it pokes through, that's the only part of the virus. That's the deadly part, the envelope protein. If your audience reads our latest book, Ending Plague, where Dr. Rossetti is the lead author on that, who worked with Fauci and Gallo, you know, in the NCI with these retroviruses, is the one who isolated first. He's considered the father of human retrovirology because he isolated the first human retrovirus when all those people sitting up there saying they don't exist. Well, it's that spike protein, the envelope protein. They changed the name of it and called it spike in the case of SARS-CoV-2, so scientists wouldn't understand what we're talking about. That alone causes the disease. You don't need the rest of the virus. That's the causative part of the disease. So in this now weaponized SARS-CoV-2, it's got SARS part of the ACE2 receptor binding domain. It's got the XMRV, the virus family we isolated from people with autism, CFS, and cancer, are the first to die because that's called syncytin. In syncytia are virus envelope fused cells. The syncytin, these envelope parts of the protein, hold the cells together. So you've got a blood clot, so you've got a tumor. All the things we're seeing happen when they injected it. You don't need all the rest of the virus. You don't need the structural proteins, and you don't have to make a virus particle because you put synthetic spike proteins or the message to make them in a synthetic viral particle that doesn't break down at 99 degrees like your body would break down a human virus.
Right?
So now they call it that busts apart the particle, and once the mRNA is in the blood, your immune system said, nope, that's a danger signal, that's a pathogen-associated molecular pattern, and it gobbles it all up like a Pac-Man. Well, now you've got a synthetic virion that you injected. So you bypass the mucosal surfaces in your natural innate immune response. And it's stabilized in some cases with polyethylene glycol antifreeze. Oh, so now they're calling it COVID pneumonia because people are showing up with 102 fever. That's the synthetic virus they injected in the world that's now being shed on everybody else because that's not a virus. That's either the bacteria in the masks or combining or a synthetic virus. And it's almost certainly the synthetic virus. Dr. Richard Fleming gave a great talk at a meeting I was at Seattle International Academy of Oral Medicine and Toxicology 10 days ago or so. And he gave a talk showing Luc Montagnier's data about the emergence of the variants around the world coming from the vaccinated who've crippled their immune system now. And so they're producing this. You've injected it. It's already there. And then it recombines very easily in a body that is immune compromised or wearing a mask. So they literally injected people with a synthetic virus and let them create viruses that, you know, that God only knows how many variants will emerge. And then copying it on other people or shedding it on other people because it's only a third the size. It's 30 nanometers. 30 nanometers goes into every cell. It's a lipid nanoparticle. That's a virus. That's a virus-like particle. And it spread to everybody else, and they knew that. They've tested that for decades.
Yeah, and I have one more question. Jonathan. All right, go ahead. Go ahead, Jonathan. I'll get to my big question.
Well, I just want to clarify. I'm not sure I understand everything you're saying enough to take a position, but clarification is like the mRNA vaccine, unlike, I guess, Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson, I guess, is close to a traditional vaccine. But these are, you know, everyone says this is not a vaccine. It manufactures, it hijacks your one's body to manufacture more spike proteins. Is that
correct? And in a synthetic virus, a synthetic lipid nanoparticle. This is how the same kind of lipid nanoparticle in the Gardasil vaccine. Only it's not mRNA. Yes. So your own cells are translating the message into spike protein. And in the case of the J&J or AstraZeneca, that's in an adenovirus vector. That's classic gene therapy vector to express the spike protein. Either way, you injected the disease. You need no other part of SARS-CoV-2 but the spike protein to cause disease. That's what the Rossettis discovered in the 80s. We've known this. This was the paper I keep showing in our first book about the XMRVs. All you need is the envelope to spread prostate cancer, to spread cancer. Why? Because the spike, the envelope, is syncytin. It's a protein that fuses cells together. Virus envelope fuse cells. So you get the blood clot. So you get the disease. You're getting the disease. And it mimics the diseases of people, like people with myalgic encephalomyelitis, people with multiple sclerosis, autism, brain disease, cancer. They have expression of syncytin. So they attack themselves because they were injected with vaccines for 40 years. Remember, our polio vaccine is grown in Vero monkey kidney cells. So, that cell line's been in the lab. That's what I tried to say in the beginning of this plandemic at the Epoch Times. I publish papers of taking Ebola bat tissues, strains of viruses, and culturing them in that cell line to tell the difference between pathogenic, deadly strains and not deadly strains of Ebola. The Ebola outbreak in 2014 came straight from Vero monkey kidney cells by way of vaccines from Fort Detrick, engineered by Tony Fauci to cover up the CDC. Oops, black people get hurt more by MMR vaccine than white boys. This is the cover-up of the crimes against humanity and the medical racism and the experimentation, and they call them vaccines, that our government, our CDC, a military organization, they have been experimenting on the susceptible people, the blacks, the Native Americans, you know, the military. That, remember the flu, the 2 January 2020 paper by Greg Wolf, big study, meta-analysis, showed, you know, more than 15,000 people in the military. If you got a flu shot, you were 4 times more likely to get a diagnosis of COVID. And this is what John Cullen showed me, that it never was SARS-CoV-2, it was influenza. The PCR tests were testing influenza, and XMRV, the 6% of America was infected, HIV. You've got those sequences. Those people came up positive in women when their cycles are expressing syncytin during pregnancy. This is what we're seeing, abortion, you know, loss of, late term loss of babies. We've already seen it. Stillbirths, we've already seen the murder of the babies. This was the goal. You asked me, it's evil. Yes, they planned it, and so they had it all set. That's Plandemic, PlandemicSeries.com. Go watch Indoctrination. That's free. It came out August 18th of 2020. You know, this is what nobody gets to see. Dr. David Martin, the Fauci dossier. It goes all over. Moderna is a gene therapy company. They just turned the sign around on the door and called it a vaccine because there was an emergency that they created, and there is no emergency. So if we stop using those terms and we say limited use, because that's what the FDA, limited use. So Tony Fauci in 2005 published the paper, hydroxychloroquine is not only a treatment, but it's a vaccine. So if America wakes up and says, I'll take hydroxychloroquine as my immunization strategy, and I'll put that in a legal affidavit, and I'll honestly answer, I'm vaccinated because I'm the only one in the country that's immune, or all the rest of the people who are smart enough to take it and call it a vaccine. That's what it is. That's what Dr. Fauci called it. That's what a peer reviewed. So you're vaccinated. So fine, you've complied with the Biden mandate. You're vaccinated. You're immune. You're better. You won't spread any variant. So that's, if people wake up, choose your immunization strategy. It won't be.
But they're not going to recognize that. I guarantee. They're not going to recognize it because they want the marketing strategy. I got a little background from Gene Yerline, so I've got you off, so I can come on back when you want to. And I've got Josie looks like wants to ask you a question. But then my big question is why? Why do they think these people are going to benefit from killing half of our country, while at the same time they're bringing in, you know, a million extra illegal aliens and 100,000 Afghanis and everything else? I'm just confused. Now, you may not want to answer that because it's more political and it's not your specialty, but I'm just going to kind of throw that out there to think about. Jesse, you're on with Dr. Trudy Mikovits, and Jonathan's here and Gene's here, and we have all too short a time.
So I know.
Yeah, I'll worry about that. I'll tell you the other chat. Let's get to Josie first of all, though. Go ahead, Josie.
Hey, Dr. Judy, it's a pleasure to hear you again. I'm still waiting for those ivermectin. I keep bugging Greg.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm running your show. I've been busy.
I just want to tell you something. I just came to the dentist because I have a pain on my side, like a toothache, and they're requiring a mask. So I've been coming to this dentist for 10 years, and I just told them off. I said, I'm finding another dentist. I'm not going to put up by wearing a mask to come to my dentist. So they're kind of sorry about it, but you know what? They're losing me and my husband. But I had a question for you. How come the insurance companies are not coming forward to stop this killing of patients? Because, you know, they have to pay for a lot of these medical bills, you know?
That's a great question.
How come
they don't. They don't have to pay for these medical bills. No, they don't. No, number one, the people are dying. And because of the way the limited use, you're free from liability. And if you go to people who are injured by the spike protein, all bets are off. No, they've never paid for the injury of the vaccine. They've never paid for the medical bills of the patients with myalgia, of ME/CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, autism. They say, oh, it's your own genetic problem. No, it's an epigenetic problem, but from the injection. No, the insurance companies aren't paying for it. Who's paying for all these supplements and all these vitamins? They're sending you home with no medicine to die. No, they're not paying for it. And then you don't get your life insurance either. People should realize before they allow themselves to get injected with a needle that nobody, a clear liquid in a needle that nobody knows what's in it except evil Tony Fauci and people trying to kill you. How stupid are you, doctor? You have absolutely no idea what you injected in a patient that could interact with the other medicines there or supplements they're taking. That's medical malpractice. That's you know, people have to wake up and realize it's not a vaccine. It's a clear liquid, and you don't know what's in it. Nobody knows what's in it. The package insert, it's an experiment. You are an experiment. So that's the point. Your experimental use. There's no emergency. They created the problem so they could do their experiment. And the big why is you're killing people. You're taking their money. You are taking their money. You know, nobody pays for these cancer treatments, but the taxpayer, they pay for every bit of it. It's destroying our country. That's the goal, to destroy our country and our liberty.
I got one more question about the monoclone. What is your opinion on that for us?
My opinion is it's another experiment. Number one, we don't need it. It's creating money for the drug company, just like remdesivir. You know, does it kill you like remdesivir destroys your kidneys quite as fast? Probably not, but it's a big experiment. I don't know. They call it a monoclonal antibody. To what? I don't know what's in it. Oh, so you made it to the spike proteins? Again, show me the data. We're not seeing any data. We're just, okay, why do we need the monoclonal antibody when we have N-acetylcysteine, glutathione, sunshine, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine? We've got therapies that work very well, and the countries using them are just fine, and they use them every year, you know, during these seasons. You know, the whole point of all of this knowledge takes down the entire vaccine program. Inoculations don't work. They never have. Lifelong, robust, lasting immunity from a virus. It doesn't matter how many viruses Tony Fauci weaponizes if we all get smart. If everybody wakes up and says, not another shot ever, ever, then they're done. Their whole $1 trillion industry goes down. They're done. They have to give them away. They have to pay you to take them. Free flu shot. Here it is. I just was by the grocery store yesterday. Free flu shot. Oh, everybody's in masks. Everybody's been shot with this experiment. And now they're putting another flu shot with God knows what we started talking about at the beginning of the show. What's in it? See, we never know every year. They're not tested. Oh, it takes 7 years to test the vaccine. No, that's a strategy for inoculating poisons. That's not a vaccine. Every year, not a single test is done on the flu shot. And what's in it and everything else. It's not. If it doesn't kill more people than last year's flu shot, which always kills people, the susceptible, over 65. So add the flu shot and inject the mRNA, and you've got recombination, meaning you, in your body, you're going to create as many fun viruses and see how many will teach to spread through humans. That's the whole goal. That's the whole goal.
Yeah. So it's like a binary weapon.
Destroy humanity.
It's like two parts of a binary weapon. You've got the vaccine and the virus. And they're I don't know which
and
came first.
Mask.
I thought the vaccine created first. Okay, so these are all components of a weapon system. And if you destroy any component, if you don't wear the mask, you don't take the vaccine, and you have an immune system to fight the virus, that's your best defense, right?
Correct.
Okay, good.
And we're sitting
easy.
Here 2 years later, the most susceptible, and we're fine.
Yeah.
And Dr. Judy, quickly, I know that we're short out of time here. I wish you were there for an hour. I'm helping
a lot
of militaries in Japan right now not to take the vaccine. And the vaccine that Pfizer approved, is the vaccine that hasn't arrived, or is the vaccine that is here? Do you know?
Yeah, what they approved is not available. What they approved is not. So there is no approved shot. There's still limited use. They're still experimenting on people, and hopefully everybody will wake up. No, that Comirnaty is not available. It's that's a bait and switch, and there's no approved vaccine.
Yeah. Gina,
okay,
go to you. We got about 2 minutes left. And I'm with Gina Jonathan. We'll see.
Hydroxychloroquine.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
Hydroxychloroquine is an approved vaccine. It's an FDA-approved drug, so it is approved vaccine.
So this is going to be interesting if people say, I am vaccinated, and you have to have a legal definition somehow. You have to have an affidavit saying, this is my vaccine.
That's what I do. I have a religious exemption for inoculations.
Okay.
I don't. My church doesn't. My God doesn't need me to inoculate it. And
yeah.
So, and then I take in that affidavit, and I answer I'm vaccinated. And it's worked. Because doctors are just checking a box. They don't care which one you got, and they can't ask. So it's worked in three cases of elderly people, and their doctors listened to me and said, okay, we're good. You know, it's a legal document.
I have some friends, so that's going to be very interesting. So I have groups I work with, health professionals here in the area in Northwest Florida, that want exemptions, and they're, so they're denying the religious ones, and I'm still trying to get my minister certificate.
Yeah.
But if you can get it, if you
they're
can,
not
if you
denying
can actually...
religious ones in many places. So you add to that under penalty of perjury, I'm
right.
immunized. Go to forunitedsolutions.org, F-O-R, Freedom of Religion, forunitedsolutions.org, and look up their legal affidavits. They've been vetted by lawyers. They're legal. I'm adding the sentence to mine that I'm immunized according to my beliefs, and you can't ask. And then I apply all the things in the rest of the document. And they haven't yet. The document is stamped. It's notarized. It's a legal document. I'm not lying. And the doctor says, you're good. He took the piece of paper. He said, show me your paperwork. I answered to make the appointment on the phone. They said, are you vaccinated? I said, yes, I'm immunized. And they said, bring the paperwork. I brought that affidavit. They didn't say one word other than, can we make
That's
a copy?
Awesome.
And I handed them a copy. So we can do this if we're smart enough to do it.
Well, that's invaluable information, which I'm going to be sharing a whole lot. We're out of time. Thank you for – I know it's last minute. I know it's crazy. I'll see if I can organize this a little better for next time. Dr. Mikovits, thank you so much.
An hour,
and to,
please. An hour.
Okay, well, work on it.
Thank you.
It'll be bad. Anyway, enjoy your day. Thank you so much. Jonathan,
thanks.
Josie, Jean, we got the three J's here, and Judy.
Those are first J's. Have a good day.
Everybody, we'll talk to you again tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the morning. 6 o'clock. Yeah, 7 Eastern, 6 o'clock Central. Greg Penglis for Action Radio, blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Wow.